Book 1, The Road Unto Love, Chapter 1. The Sundering of the Ways. Long ago there was a little land, over which ruled a Regulus or kinglet, who was called King Peter, though his kingdom was but little. He had four sons whose names were Blaise, Hugh, Gregory and Ralph. Of these Ralph was the youngest, whereas he was but of 20 winters and one, and Blaise was the oldest and had seen 30 winters. Now it came to this at last, that to these young men the kingdom of their father seemed straight, and they longed to see the ways of other men, and to strive for a life. For though they were king's sons, they had but little world's wealth, save and except good meat and drink, and enough or too much thereof, house room of the best, friends to be merry with, and maidens to kiss, and these also as good as might be, freedom with all to come and go as they would, the heavens above them, the earth to bear them up, and the meadows and acres, the woods and fair streams, and the little hills of Upmeads, for that was the name of their country in the kingdom of King Peter. So having naught but this little they longed for much, and that the more because, king's sons as they were, they had but scant dominion save over their horses and dogs, for the men of that country were stubborn and sturdy vavassors, and might not away with masterful doings, but were like to pay back a blow with a blow, and a foul word with a buffet. So that, all things considered, it was little wonder if King Peter's sons found themselves straitened in their little land, wherein was no great merchant city, no mighty castle, or noble abbey of monks, naught but fair little halls of yeomen, with here and there Franklin's court or a shield knight's manor house, with many a goodly church, and whiles a house of good canons, who knew not the road to Rome, nor how to find the door of the chancellor's house. So these young men wearied their father and mother a long while with telling them of their weariness, and their longing to be gone, till at last on a fair and hot afternoon of June King Peter rose up from the carpet which the prior of St. John's by the bridge had given him, for he had been sleeping thereon amidst the grass of his orchard after his dinner, and he went into the hall of his house, which was called the High House of Upmeads, and sent for his four sons to come to him. And they came and stood before his high seat and he said, "Sons, ye have long wearied me with words concerning your longing for travel on the roads, now if ye verily wish to be gone, tell me when would ye take your departure if ye had your choice?" They looked at one another, and the three younger ones nodded at Blaise the eldest, so he began, and said, "Saving the love and honor that we have for thee, and also for our mother, we would be gone at once, even with the noon's meat still in our bellies. But thou art the lord in this land, and thou must rule. Have I said well, brethren?" And they all said yea, yea. Then said the king, "Good. Now is the sun high and hot, yet if ye ride softly ye may come to some good harbor before nightfall without foundering your horses. So come ye in an hour's space to the forewant way, and there and then will I order your departure." The young men were full of joy when they heard his word, and they departed and went this way and that, gathering such small matters as each deemed that he needed, and which he might lightly carry with him. Then they armed themselves, and would bid the squires bring them their horses, but men told them that the said squires had gone their ways already to the want way by the king's commandment, so thither they went at once afoot all four in company, laughing and talking together merrily. It must be told that this want way aforesaid was but 4 furlongs from the house, which lay in an ingle of the river called Upmeads Water amongst very fair meadows at the end of the upland tillage, and the land sloped gently up toward the hill country and the unseen mountains on the north, but to the south was a low ridge which ran along the water, as it wound along from west to east. Beyond the said ridge, at a place whence you could see the higher hills to the south, that stretched mainly east and west also, there was presently an end of the kingdom of Upmeads, though the neighbors on that side were peaceable and friendly, and were wont to send gifts to King Peter. But toward the north beyond the want way King Peter was lord over a good stretch of land, and that of the best, yet was he never a rich man, for he had no freedom to tax and tail his folk, nor forsooth would he have used it if he had, for he was no ill man, but kindly and of measure. On these northern marches there was war at whiles, whereas they ended in a great forest well furnished of trees, and this wood was debatable, and King Peter and his sons rode therein at their peril, but great plenty was therein of all wild deer, as hart, and buck, and roe, and swine, and bears and wolves withal. The lord on the other side thereof was a mightier man than King Peter, albeit he was a bishop, and a baron of holy church. To say sooth he was a close fist and a manslayer, though he did his manslaying through his vicars, the knights and men-at-arms who held their manors of him, or whom he waged. In that forest had King Peter's father died in battle, and his eldest son also, therefore, being a man of peace, he rode therein but seldom, though his sons, the three eldest of them, had both ridden therein and ran therefrom valiantly. As for Ralph the youngest, his father would not have him ride the wood debatable as yet. So came those young men to the want ways, and found their father sitting there on a heap of stones, and over against him 8 horses, four destriers, and four hackneys, and four squires with all. So they came and stood before their father, waiting for his word, and wondering what it would be. Now spake King Peter, Fair sons, ye would go on all adventure to seek a wider land, and a more stirring life than ye may get of me at home, so be it. But I have bethought me, that, since I am growing old and past the age of getting children, one of you, my sons, must abide at home to cherish me and your mother, and to lead our Carlos in war if trouble falleth upon us. Now I know not how to choose by mine own wit which of you shall ride and which abide. For so it is that ye are diverse of your conditions, but the evil conditions which one of you lacks the other hath, and the valiancy which one hath, the other lacks. Blaise is wise and prudent, but no great man of his hands. Hugh is a stout rider and lifter, but headstrong and foolhardy, and over bounteous a skinker, and Gregory is courteous and many-worded, but sluggish indeed, though I will not call him a dastard. As for Ralph, he is fair to look on, and peradventure he may be as wise as Blaise, as valiant as Hugh, and as smooth-tongued as Gregory, but of all this we know little or nothing, whereas he is but young and untried. Yet may he do better than you others, and I deem that he will do so. All things considered, then, I say, I know not how to choose between you, my sons, so let luck choose for me, and ye shall draw cuts for your roads, and he that draweth longest shall go north, and the next longest shall go east, and the third straw shall send the drawer west, but as to him who draweth the shortest cut, he shall go no whither but back again to my house, there to abide with me the chances and changes of life, and it is most like that this one shall sit in my chair when I am gone, and be called King of Upmeads. Now, my sons, doth this ordinance please you? For if so be it doth not, then may ye all abide at home, and eat of my meat, and drink of my cup, but little chide it either for sloth or misdoing, even as it hath been aforetime. The young men looked at one another, and Blaise answered and said, Sir, as for me I say we will do after your commandment, to take what road luck may show us, or to turn back home again. They all ye said this one after the other, and then King Peter said, Now before I draw the cuts, I shall tell you that I have appointed the squires to go with each one of you. Richard the Red shall go with Blaise, for though he be somewhat stricken in years, and wise, yet is he a fierce carle and a doughty, and knoweth well all feats of arms. Lancelot Longtongue shall be squire to Hugh, for he is good of seeming and can compass all courtesy, and knoweth logic, though it be of the law and not of the schools, yet is he a proper man of his hands, as needs must he be who followeth Hugh, for where is Hugh, there is trouble and debate. Clement the Black shall serve Gregory, for he is a careful carle, and speaketh one word to every 10 deeds that he doeth, whether they be done with point and edge, or with the hammer in the smithy. Lastly, I have none left to follow thee, Ralph, save Nicholas Longshanks, but though he hath more words than I have, yet hath he more wisdom, and is a man lettered and far-travelled, and loveth our house right well. How say ye, sons, is this to your liking? They all said yea. Then quoth the king, Nicholas, bring hither the straws ready dight, and I will give them my sons to draw. So each young man came up in turn and drew, and King Peter laid the straws together and looked at them, and said, Thus it is, Hugh goeth north with Lancelot, Gregory westward with Clement. He stayed a moment and then said, Blaise fareth eastward and Richard with him. As for thee, Ralph my dear son, thou shalt back with me and abide in my house and I shall see thee day by day, and thou shalt help me to live my last years happily in all honour, and thy love shall be my hope, and thy valiancy my stay. Therewith he arose and threw his arm about the young man's neck, but he shrank away a little from his father, and his face grew troubled, and King Peter noted that, and his countenance fell, and he said, Nay, nay, my son, grudge not thy brethren the chances of the road, and the ill hap of the battle. Here at least for thee is the bounteous board and the full cup, and the love of kindred and well-willers, and the fellowship of the folk. O well is thee, my son, and happy shalt thou be. But the young man knit his brows and said no word in answer. Then came forward those three brethren who were to fare at all adventure, and they stood before the old man saying naught. Then he laughed and said, Oho, my sons! Here in Upmeads have ye all ye need without money, but when ye fare in the outlands ye need money, is it not a lack of yours that your pouches be bare? Abide, for I have seen to it. Therewith he drew out of his pouch three little bags, and said, Take ye each one of these, for therein is all that my treasury may shed as now. In each of these is there coined money, both white and red, and some deal of gold uncoined, and of rings and brooches a few, and by estimation there is in each bag the same value reckoned in lawful silver of Upmeads and the Wolds and the Overhill countries. Take up each what there is, and do the best ye may therewith. Then each took his bag, and kissed and embraced his father, And they kissed Ralph and each other, and so got to horse and departed with their squires, going softly because of the hot sun. But Nicholas slowly mounted his hackney and led Ralph's war horse with him home again to King Peter's house. Chapter 2. Ralph goeth back home to the high house. Ralph and King Peter walked slowly home together, and as they went King Peter fell to telling of how in his young days he rode in the wood to Baitable, and was belated there all alone, and happed upon men who were outlaws and wolfheads, and feared for his life, but they treated him kindly, and honored him, and saw him safe on his way in the morning. So that never thereafter would he be hard and part with those who hunted outlaws to slay them. For, said he, it is with these men as with others, that they make prey of folk, yet these for the more part prey on the rich, and the lawful prey on the poor. Otherwise it is with these wolfheads as with lords and knights and franklins, that as there be bad amongst them, so also there be good, and the good ones I happed on, and so may another man. Hereto paid Ralph little heed at that time, since he had heard the tale and its morality before, and that more than once, and moreover his mind was set upon his own matters and these was he pondering. Albeit perchance the words abode with him. So came they to the house, and Ralph's mother, who was a noble dame, and well liking as for her years, which were but little over 50, stood in the hall door to see which of her sons should come back to her, and when she saw them coming together, she went up to them, and cast her arms about Ralph and kissed him and caressed him, being exceeding glad that it was he and not one of the others who had returned to dwell with them, for he was her best beloved, as was little marvel, seeing that he was by far the fairest and the most loving. But Ralph's face grew troubled again in his mother's arms, for he loved her exceeding well, and forsooth he loved the whole house and all that dwelt there, down to the turnspit dogs in the chimney ingle, and the swallows that nested in the earthen bottles, which when he was little he had seen his mother put up in the eaves of the outbowers. But now, love or no love, the spur was in his side, and he must needs hasten as fate would have him. However, when he had disentangled himself from his mother's caresses, he enforced himself to keep a cheerful countenance, and upheld it the whole evening through, and was by seeming merry at supper, and went to bed singing. Chapter 3. Ralph cometh to the Cheaping Town. He slept in an upper chamber in a turret of the house, which chamber was his own, and none might meddle with it. There the next day he awoke in the dawning, and arose and clad himself, and took his war gear and his sword and spear, and bore all away without doors to the side of the fort in that ingle of the river, and laid it for a while in a little willow copse, so that no chance comer might see it. Then he went back to the stable of the house and took his destrier from the stall. It was a dapple grey horse called Falcon, and was right good, and brought him down to the said willow copse, and tied him to a tree till he had armed himself amongst the willows, whence he came forth presently as brisk looking and likely a man at arms as you might see on a summer day. Then he clomb up into the saddle, and went his way splashing across the ford, before the sun had arisen, while the throstle cocks were yet amidst their first song. Then he rode on a little trot south away, and by then the sun was up he was without the bounds of Upmeads, albeit in the land thereabout dwelt none who were not friends to King Peter and his sons, and that was well, for now were folk stirring and were abroad in the fields, as a band of carles going with their scythes to the hayfield, or a maiden with her milking pails going to her kine, barefoot through the seeding grass, or a company of noisy little lads on their way to the nearest pool of the stream that they might bathe in the warm morning after the warm night. All these and more knew him and his armor and Falcon his horse, and gave him the sally of the day, and he was nowise troubled at meeting them, for besides that they thought it no wonder to meet one of the lords of Upmeads going armed about his errands, their own errands were close at home, and it was little likely that they should go that day so far as to Upmeads water, seeing that it ran through the meadows a half score miles to the northward. So Ralph rode on, and came into the high road, that led one way back again into Upmeads, and crossed the water by a fair bridge late builded between King Peter and a house of cannons on the north side, and the other way into a good Cheaping Town hight Walstead, beyond which Ralph knew little of the world which lay to the south, and seemed to him a wondrous place, full of fair things and marvellous adventures. So he rode till he came into the town when the fair morning was still young, the first mass over, and maids gathered about the fountain amidst the marketplace, and two or three dames sitting under the buttercross. Ralph rode straight up to the house of a man whom he knew, and had often given him guesting there, and he himself was not seldom seen in the high house of Upmeads. This man was a merchant, who went and came betwixt men's houses, and bought and sold many things needful and pleasant to folk, and King Peter dealt with him much and often. Now he stood in the door of his house, which was new and goodly, sniffing the sweet scents which the morning wind bore into the town. He was clad in a goodly long gown of grey welted with silver, of thin cloth meet for the summertide, for little he wrought with his hands, but much with his tongue. He was a man of 40 summers, ruddy-faced and black-bearded, and he was called Clement Chapman. When he saw Ralph he smiled kindly on him, and came and held his stirrup as he lighted down, and said, Welcome, Lord. Art thou come to give me a message, and eat and drink in a poor huckster's house, and thou armed so gallantly? Ralph laughed merrily, for he was hungry, and he said, Yea, I will eat and drink with thee and kiss my gossip, and go my ways. Therewith the carle led him into the house, and if it were goodly without, within it was better. For there was a fair chamber panelled with wainscot well carven, and a cupboard of no sorry vessels of silver and latten, the chairs and stools as fair as might be, no king's might be better, the windows were glazed, and there were flowers and nuts and posies in them, and the bed was hung with goodly web from oversea such as the Soldan useth. Also, whereas the chapmen's were bowers were hard by the chamber, there was a pleasant mingled smell therefrom floating about. The table was set with meat and drink and vessel of pewter and earth, all fair and good, and thereby stood the chapman's wife, a very goodly woman of 20 years, who had held Ralph at the font when she was a slim damsel new wedded, for she was come of no mean kindred of the kingdom of Upmeads, her name was Dame Catherine. Now she kissed Ralph's cheek friendly, and said, Welcome, gossip. Thou art here in good time to break thy fast, and we will give thee a trim dinner thereafter, when thou hast been here and there in the town and done thine errand, and then shalt thou drink a cup and sing me a song, and so home again in the cool of the evening. Ralph seemed a little troubled at her word, and he said, Nay, gossip, though I thank thee for all these good things as though I had them, yet must I ride away south straightway after I have breakfasted, and said one word to the goodman. Goodman, how call ye the next town southward, and how far is it thither? Quoth Clement, My son, what hast thou to do with riding south? As thou oughtest, going hence south ye must presently ride the hill country, and that is no safe journey for a lonely man, even if he be a doughty knight like to thee, Lord. Said Ralph, reddening withal, I have an errand that way. An errand of King Peter's or thine own? Said Clement. Of King Peter's, if ye must wot, said Ralph. Clement were no chapman had he not seen that the lad was lying, so he said. Fair Lord, saving your worship, how would it be as to the speeding of King Peter's errand, if I brought thee before our mayor, and swore the peace against thee, so that I might keep thee in courteous prison till I had sent to thy father of thy whereabouts? The young man turned red with anger, but ere he could speak Dame Catherine said sharply, Hold thy peace, Clement. What hast thou to meddle or make in the matter? If our young lord hath will to ride out and see the world, why should we let him? Yea, why should his father let him, if it come to that? Take my word for it that my gossip shall go through the world and come back to those that love him, as goodly as he went forth. And hold. Here's for a token thereof. Therewith she went to an ark that stood in the corner, and groped in the till thereof and brought out a little necklace of blue and green stones with gold knobs betwixt, like a pair of beads, albeit neither pope nor priest had blessed them, and tied to the necklace was a little box of gold with something hidden therein. This gaud she gave to Ralph, and said to him, Gossip, wear this about thy neck, and let no man take it from thee, and I think it will be salvation to thee in peril, and good luck to thee in the time of questing, so that it shall be to thee as if thou hadst drunk of the well at the world's end. What is that water? Said Ralph, and how may I find it? I know not rightly, she said, but if a body might come by it, I hear say it salveth from weariness and wounding and sickness, and it winneth love from all, and maybe life everlasting. Hast thou not heard tell of it, my husband? Yea, said the chapman, many times, and how that whoso hath drunk thereof hath the tongue that none may withstand, whether in buying or selling, or prevailing over the hearts of men in any wise. But as for its whereabouts, ye shall not find it in these parts. Men say that it is beyond the Dry Tree, and that is afar, God wot. But now, Lord Ralph, I rede thee go back again this evening with Andrew, my nephew, for company, forsooth. He will do little less gainful than riding with thee to Upmeads than if he abide in Walstead, for he is idle. But, my lord, take it not amiss that I spake about the mayor and the tipstaves, for it was but a jest, as thou mayest well wot. Ralph's face cleared at that word, and he stood smiling, weighing the chaplet in his hand, but Dame Catherine said, Dear gossip, do it on speedily, for it is a gift from me unto thee, and from a gossip even king's sons may take a gift. Quoth Ralph, But is it lawful to wear it? Is there no wizardry within it? Hearken to him. She said, And how like unto a man he speaketh, if there were a brawl in the street, he would strike in and ask no word thereof, not even which were the better side, whereas here is my falcon chick frighted at a little gold box and a pair of Saracen beads. Well, quoth Ralph, the first holy man I meet shall bless them for me. That shall he not, said the dame, that shall he not. Who wotteth what shall betide to thee or me if he do so? Come, do them on, and then to table. For seest thou not that the good man is wearying for meat? And even thine eyes will shine the brighter for a mouthful, king's son and gossip. She took him by the hand and did the beads on his neck and kissed and fondled him before he sat down, while the good man looked on, grinning rather sheepishly, but said naught to them, and only called on his boy to lead the destrier to stable. So when they were set down, the chapman took up the word where it had been dropped, and said, "So, Lord Ralph, thou must needs take to adventures, being, as thou deemest, full grown. That is all one as the duck taketh to water despite of the hen that hath hatched her. Well, it was not to be thought that Upmeads would hold you lords much longer. Or what is gone with my lords your brethren?" Said Ralph, "They have departed at all adventure, north, east, and west, each bearing our father's blessing and a bag of pennies. And to speak the truth, goodman, for I perceive I am no doctor at lying, my father and mother would have me stay at home when my brethren were gone, and that liketh me not, therefore am I come out to seek my luck in the world, for Upmeads is good for a stargazer, maybe, or a simpler, or a priest, or a worthy good carle of the fields, but not for a king's son with the blood running hot in his veins. Or what sayest thou, gossip?" Quoth the dame, "I can weep for thy mother, but for thee not at all. It is good that thou shouldest do thy will in the season of youth and the days of thy pleasure. Yea, and I deem that thou shalt come back again great and worshipful, and I am called somewhat foreseeing. Only look to it that thou keep the pretty thing that I have just given thee." "Well," said the chapman, "this is fine talk about pleasure and the doing of one's will, nevertheless a whole skin is good wares, though it be not to be cheapened in any market of the world. Now, Lord, go thou where thou wilt, whether I say go or abide, and forsooth I am no man of King Peter's, that I should stay thee. As for the name of the next town, it is called Higham on the Way, and is a big town plenteous of victuals, with strong walls and a castle, and a very rich abbey of monks, and there is peace within its walls, because the father abbot wages a many men to guard him and his, and to uphold his rights against all comers, wherein he doth wisely, and also well. For much folk flocketh to his town and live well therein, and there is great recourse of chapmen thither. No better market is there betwixt this and Babylon. Well, Sir Ralph, I rede thee if thou comest unhurt to Higham on the Way, go no further for this time, but take service with the Lord Abbot, and be one of his men of war, thou mayst then become his captain if thou shouldest live, which would be no bad adventure for one who cometh from Upmeads." Ralph looked no brighter for this word, and he answered naught to it, but said presently, "And what is to be looked for beyond Higham if one goeth further? Dost thou know the land any further?" The carle smiled, "Yea forsooth, and down to the Wood Perilous, and beyond it, and the lands beyond the wood, and far away through them. I say not that I have been to the Dry Tree, but I have spoken to one who hath heard of him who hath seen it, though he might not come by a draught of the well at the world's end." Ralph's eyes flashed, and his cheeks reddened as he listened hereto, but he spake quietly, "Master Clement, how far dost thou make it to Higham on the Way?" "A matter of 40 miles, said the chapman, "because, as thou oughtest, if ye ride south from hence, ye shall presently bring your nose up against the big downs, and must needs climb them at once, and when ye're at the top of Bear Hill, and look south away ye shall see naught but downs on downs with never a road to call a road, and never a castle, or church, or homestead, naught but some shepherd's hut, or at the most the little house of a holy man with a little chapel thereby in some swelly of the chalk, where the water hath trickled into a pool, for otherwise the place is waterless." Therewith he took a long pull at the tankard by his side, and went on, "Higham is beyond all that, and out into the fertile plain, and a little river hight Cold Lake windeth about the meadows there, and it is a fair land, though look you the wool of the downs is good, good, good. I have 4 sin of this year's fleeces with me. Ye shall raise none such in Upmeads." Ralph sat silent a little, as if pondering, and then he started up and said, "Good Master Clement, we have eaten thy meat and thank thee for that and other matters. Wilt thou now be kinder, and bid thy boy bring round Falcon our horse, for we have far to go, and must be gone straightway." "Yea, Lord," said Clement, "even so will I do." And he muttered under his breath, "Thou talkest big, my lad, with thy wee, but thou art pressed lest Nicholas be here presently to fetch thee back, and to say sooth I would his hand were on thy shoulder even now." Then he spake aloud again, and said, "I must now be gone to my lads, and I will send one round with thy warhorse. But take my rede, my lord, and become the man of the Abbot of St. Mary's of Higham, and all will be well." Therewith he edged himself out of the chamber, and the dame fell to making a mighty clatter with the vessel and trenchers and cups on the board, while Ralph walked up and down the chamber his war gear jingling upon him. Presently the dame left her table clatter and came up to Ralph and looked kindly into his face and said, "Gossip, hast thou perchance any money?" He flushed up red, and then his face fell, yet he spake gaily, "Yea, gossip, I have both white and red, there are 3 golden crowns in my pouch, and a little flock of silver pennies, forsooth I say not as many as would reach from here to Upmeads, if they were laid one after the other." She smiled and patted his cheek, and said, "Thou art no very prudent child, king's son. But it comes into my mind that my master did not mean thee to go away empty-handed, else had he not departed and left us twain together." Therewith she went to the credence that stood in a corner, and opened a drawer therein and took out a little bag, and gave it into Ralph's hand, and said, "This is the gift of the gossip, and thou mayst take it without shame, all the more because if thy father had been a worser man, and a harder lord, he would have had more to give thee. But now thou hast as much or more as any one of thy brethren." He took the bag smiling and shamefaced, but she looked on him fondly and said, "Now I know not whether I shall lay old Nicholas on thine heels when he cometh after thee, as come he will full surely, or whether I shall suffer the old sleuth-hound nose out thy slot of himself, as full surely he will set unto it." "Thou mightest tell him," said Ralph, "that I am gone to take service with the abbot of St. Mary's of Higham, ha?" She laughed and said, "Wilt thou do so, lord, and follow the rede of that goodman of mine, who thinketh himself as wise as Solomon?" Ralph smiled and answered her nothing. "Well," she said, "I shall say what likes me when the hour is at hand. Lo, here, thine horse. Abide yet a moment of time, and then go whither thou needs must, like the wind of the summer day." Therewith she went out of the chamber and came back again with a scrip which she gave to Ralph and said, "Herein is a flask of drink for the waterless country, and a little meat for the way. Fare thee well, gossip. Little did I look for it when I rose up this morning, and nothing irked me save the dullness of our town, and the littleness of men's doings therein, that I should have to cut off a piece of my life for me this morning, and say, farewell gossip, as now again I do." Therewith she kissed him on either cheek and embraced him, and it might be said of her and him that she let him go thereafter, for though as aforesaid he loved her, and praised her kindness, he scarce understood the eagerness of her love for him, whereas moreover she saw him not so often betwixt Upmeads and Wellstead, and belike she herself scarce understood it, albeit she was a childless woman. So when he had got to horse, she watched him riding a moment, and saw how he waved his hand to her as he turned the corner of the marketplace, and how a knot of lads and lasses stood staring on him after she lost sight of him. Then she turned her back into the chamber and laid her head on the table and wept. Then came in the goodman quietly and stood by her, and she heeded him not. He stood grinning curiously on her a while, and then laid his hand on her shoulder, and said as she raised her face to him, "Sweetheart, it availeth not, when thou wert young and exceeding fair, he was but a little babe, and thou wert looking in those days to have babes of thine own, and then it was too soon, and now that he is such a beauteous young man, and a king's son withal, and thou art wedded to a careful carl of no weak heart, and thou thyself art more than 20 years old, it is too late. Yet thou didst well to give our lord the money. Lo! Here is wherewithal to fill up the lack in thy chest, and here is a toy for thee in place of the pair of beads thou gavest him, and I bid thee look on it as if I had given him my share of the money and the beads." She turned to Clement, and took the bag of money, and the chaplet which he held out to her, and she said, "God wot thou art no ill man, my husband, but would God I had a son like to him." She still wept somewhat, but the chapman said, "Let it rest there, sweetheart. Let it rest there. It may be a year or twain before thou seest him again, and then belike he shall be come back with some woman whom he loves better than any other, and who knows but in a way he may deem himself our son. Meanwhile thou hast done well, sweetheart, so be glad." Therewith he kissed her and went his ways to his merchandise, and she to the ordering of her house, grieved but not unhappy. Chapter 4. Ralph rideth the downs. As for Ralph, he rode on with a merry heart, and presently came to an end of the plain country, and the great downs rose up before him with a white road winding up to the top of them. Just before the slopes began to rise was a little thorp beside a stream, and thereby a fair church and a little house of canons, so Ralph rode toward the church to see if therein were an altar of St. Nicholas, who was his good lord and patron, that he might ask of him a blessing on his journey. But as he came up to the churchyard gate he saw a great black horse tied thereto as if abiding someone, and as he lighted down from his saddle he saw a man coming hastily from out the church door and striding swiftly toward the said gate. He was a big man, and armed, for he had a bright steel sallet on his head, which covered his face all save the end of his chin, and plates he had on his legs and arms. He wore a green coat over his armor, and thereon was wrought in gold an image of a tree leafless. He had a little steel axe about his neck, and a great sword hung by his side. Ralph stood looking on him with his hand on the latch of the gate, but when the man came thereto he tore it open roughly and shoved through it once, driving Ralph back, so that he well nigh overset him, and so sprang to his horse and swung himself into the saddle, just as Ralph steadied himself and ruffled up to him, half drawing his sword from the scabbard the while. But the man-at-arms cried out, "Put it back, put it back. If thou must needs deal with every man that shoveth thee in his haste, thy life is like to be but short." He was settling himself in his saddle as he spoke, and now he shook his rein, and rode off speedily toward the hill road. But when he was so far off that Ralph might but see his face but as a piece of reddish color, he reined up for a moment of time, and turning round in his saddle lifted up his sallet and left his face bare, and cried out as if to Ralph, the first time. And then let the headpiece fall again, and set spurs to his horse and galloped away. Ralph stood looking at him as he got smaller on the long white road, and wondering what this might mean, and how the unknown man should know him, if he did know him. But presently he let his wonder run off him, and went his ways into the church, wherein he found his good lord and friend Saint Nicholas, and so set a paternoster before his altar, and besought his help, and made his offering, and then departed and gat to horse again, and rode softly the way to the downs, for the day was hot. The way was steep and winding, with a hollow cup of the hills below it, and above it a bent so steep that Ralph could see but a few yards of it on his left hand, but when he came to the hill's brow and could look down on the said bend, he saw strange figures on the face thereof, done by cutting away the turf so that the chalk might show clear. A tree with leaves was done on that hillside, and on either hand of it a beast like a bear ramping up against the tree, and these signs were very ancient. This hillside carving could not be seen from the thorp beneath, which was called Netherton, because the bent looked westward down into the hollow of the hill above said, but from nigher to Walstead they were clear to see, and Ralph had often beheld them, but never so nigh, and that hill was called after them Bear Hill. At the top of it was an earthwork of the ancient folk, which also was called Bear Castle. And now Ralph rode over the hill's brow into it, for the walls had been beaten down in places long and long ago. Now he rode up the wall, and at the topmost of it turned and looked aback on the blue country which he had ridden through stretching many a league below, and tried if he could pick out Upmeads from amongst the diverse wealth of the summerland, but Upmeads water was hidden, and he could see nothing to be sure of to tell him whereabouts the high house stood. Yet he deemed that he could make out the Debateable Wood and the hills behind it well enough. Then he turned his horse about, and had the down country before him, long lines of hills to wit, one rising behind the other like the waves of a somewhat quiet sea, no trees thereon, nor houses that he might see thence, naught but a green road that went waving up and down before him greener than the main face of the slopes. He looked at it all for a minute or two as the southwest wind went past his ears, and played a strange tune on the innumerable stems of the bents and the hard-stalked blossoms, to which the bees sang counterpoint. Then the heart arose within him, and he drew the sword from the scabbard, and waved it about his head, and shook it toward the south, and cried out, "Now, welcome world, and be thou blessed from one end to the other, from the ocean sea to the uttermost mountains." A while he held the white steel in his fist, and then sheathed the blade, and rode down soberly over the turf bridge across the ancient fosse, and so came on to the green road made many ages before by an ancient people, and so trotted south along fair and softly. Little is to be told of his journey through the downs, as he topped a low hill whereon were seven grave mounds of the ancient folk in a row. He came on a shepherd lying amidst of his sheep. The man sprang to his feet when he heard horse hoofs anigh him and saw the glint of steel, and he set his hand to a short spear which lay by him. But when he saw naught but Ralph, and heard how he gave him the sally of the day, he nodded his head in a friendly way, though he said naught in salutation, for the loneliness of the downs made the speech slow within him. Again some 2 miles further on Ralph met a flock of sheep coming down a bent which the road climbed, and with them were 3 men, their drovers, and they drew nigh him as he was amidst of the sheep, so that he could scarce see the way. Each of these 3 had a weapon, one a poleaxe, another a long spear, and the 3rd a flail jointed and bound with iron, and an anlace hanging at his girdle. So they stood in the way and hailed him when the sheep were gone past, and the man with the spear asked him whither away. "I am turned toward Higham on the way," quoth he, "and how many miles shall I ride ere I get there?" Said one of them, "Little less than 20, Lord." Now it was past noon 2 hours, and the day was hot, so whereas the faces of the men looked kind and friendly, albeit somewhat rugged, he lighted down from his horse and sat down by the wayside, and drew his bottle of good wine from out of his wallet, and asked the men if they were in haste. "Nay, master," said he of the poleaxe, while all eyes turned to the bottle, "he has gone by too long, and will neither meddle with us, nor may we deal with him." "Well then," quoth Ralph, "there is time for bever. Have ye aught of a cup, that we may drink to each other? Yea, said the carle with the endless, that have I. Therewith he drew from his pouch a ram's horn rimmed with silver, and held it up, and said as if he were speaking to it, Now, thoroughly, rejoice. For ye shall have Lord's wine poured into thymwa. Therewith he held it out toward Ralph, who laughed and filled it up, and filled for himself a little silver cup which he carried, and said, To you, shepherds. Much will and little cry. And he drank withal. And I, quoth the man with the horn, call this health, much cry and little wool. Well, well, how mean ye by that, greasy what? Said the man with the spear, taking the horn as he spake, that is but a poor wish for a lord that drinketh out of our cup. Said what? Why, neighbor, why? Thy wit is none too hasty. The wool that a knight sheareth is war and battle, that is wounding and death, but the cry is the talk and boasting and minstrelsy that goeth before all this. Which is the best wish to wish him? The wounds and the death, or the fore rumor and stir thereof which hurteth no man? Ralph laughed thereat, and was merry and blithe with them, but the spearman, who was an old man, said, For all what saith, Lord, and his japes, ye must not misdeem of us that we shepherds of the downs can do naught but run to ales and feasts, and that we are but pot valiant, maybe thou thyself mayst live to see things go otherwise, and in that day may we have such as thee for captain. Now, fair lord, I drink to thy crown of valour, and thy good luck, and we thank thee for the wine and yet more for the blithe fellowship. So Ralph filled up the ram's horn till Dame Catherine's good island wine was well nigh spent, and at last he said, Now, my masters, I must to horse, but I pray you tell or we depart, what did ye mean when ye said that he had gone past? Who is he? The merry faces of the men changed at his word, and they looked in each other's faces, till at last the old spearman answered him. Fair lord, these things we have little will to talk about, for we be poor men with no master to fleece us, and no lord to help us, also we be folk unlearned and unlettered, and from our way of life, whereas we dwell in the wilderness, we seldom come within the doors of a church. But whereas we have drunk with thee, who seemest to be a man of lineage, and thou hast been blithe with us, we will tell thee that we have seen one riding south along the greenway, clad in a coat as green as the way, with a leafless tree done on his breast. So nigh to him we were that we heard his cry as he sped along, as ye may hear the lapwing whining, for he said, point and edge, the red water amidst of the hills. In my lifetime such a man hath, to my knowledge, been seen thrice before, and after each sight of him followed evil days and the death of men. Moreover this is the eve of St. John, and we deem the token the worse therefore. Or how deemest thou? Ralph stood silent a while, for he was thinking of the big man whom he had met at the churchyard gate, and all this tale seemed wonderful to him. But at last he said, I cannot tell what there is in it, herein am I no help to you. Today I am but little, though I may one day be great. Yet this may I do for you, tomorrow will I let sing a mass in St. Mary's Church on your behoof. And hereafter, if I wax as my will is, and I come to be lord in these lands, I will look to it to do what a good lord should do for the shepherds of the downs, so that they may live well, and die in good hope. So may the Mother of God help me at need. Said the old shepherd, Thou hast sworn an oath, and it is a good oath, and well sworn. Now if thou dost as thou swearest, words can but little thanks, yet deeds may. Wherefore if ever thou comest back hither, and art in such need that a throng of men may help thee therein, then let light a great fire upon each corner of the topmost wall of Bear Castle, and call to mind this watchword, Smite aside the axe, O Bear Father, and then shalt thou see what shall betide thee for thy good hap, farewell now, with the saints to aid. Ralph bade them live well and hail, and mounted his horse and rode off down the greenway, and as he rode the shepherds waved their weapons to him in token of goodwill. Chapter 5. Ralph cometh to Higham on the way. Naught more befell Ralph to tell of till he came to the end of the downs and saw Higham lying below him overlooked by a white castle on a knoll, and with a river lapping it about and winding on through its fair green meadows even as Clement had told. From amidst its houses rose up three towers of churches above their leaden roofs, and high above all, long and great, the Abbey Church, and now was the low sun glittering on its gilded vanes and the wings of the angels high upon the battlements. So Ralph rode down the slopes and was brisk about it, for it was drawing toward sunset, and he knew not at what hour they shut their gates. The road was steep and winding, and it was the more part of an hour ere he came to the gate, which was open, and like to be yet, for many folk were thronging in, which throng also had hindered him soon after he came into the plain country. The gate was fair and strong, but Ralph saw no man-at-arms about it that evening. He rode into the street unquestioned, and therein was the throng great of people clad in fair and gay attire, And presently Ralph called to mind that this was St. John's Eve, so that he knew that there was some feast toward. At last the throng was so thick that he was stayed by it, and therewithal a religious who was beside him and thrust up against his horse, turned to him and gave him good even, and said, "By thy weapons and gear thou art a stranger here in our burg, Sir Knight?"
"So it is," said Ralph.
"And whither away?" said the monk. "Hast thou some kinsman or friend in the town?"
"Nay," said Ralph, "I seek a good hostelry where I may abide the night for my money."
The monk shook his head and said, "See ye the folk? It is holiday time, and midsummer after Hazel. Ye shall scarce get lodging outside our house.
But what then?
Come thou thither straightway and have harbour of the best, and see our prior, who loveth young and brisk men-at-arms like to thee. Lo now! The throng openeth a little, I will walk by thy bridle and lead thee the shortest road thither."
Ralph gainsaid him not, and they bored through the throng of the street till they came into the market square, which was very great and clean, paved with stones all over. Tall and fair houses rose up on three sides of it, and on the fourth was the great church which made those houses seem but low. Most of it was new built, for the Lord Abbot that then was, though he had not begun it, had taken the work up from his forerunner and had pushed it forward all he might, for he was very rich, and an open-handed man. Like dark gold it showed under the evening sun, and the painted and gilded imagery shone like jewels upon it.
"Yea," said the monk, as he noted Ralph's wonder at this wonder, "a most goodly house it is, and happy shall they be that dwell there." Therewith he led Ralph on, turning aside through the great square. Ralph saw that there were many folk therein, though it was too big to be thronged thick with them. Amidst of it was now a great pile of wood hung about with flowers, and hard by it a stage built up with hangings of rich cloth on one side thereof. He asked the monk what this might mean, and he told him the wood was for the midsummer balefire, and the stage for the show that should come thereafter. So the brother led Ralph down a lane to the south of the great west door, and along the side of the minster, and so came to the abbey gate, and there was Ralph well greeted, and had all things given him which were due to a good knight, and then was he brought into the guest hall, a very fair chamber, which was now full of men of all degrees. He was shown to a seat on the dais within two of the sub-priors, and beside him sat an honourable lord, a vassal of St. Mary's. So was supper served well and abundantly, the meat and drink was of the best, and the vessel and all the plenishing was as good as might be, and the walls of the chamber were hung with noble arras cloth picturing the pilgrimage of the soul of man. Every man there who spoke with Ralph, and they were many, was exceeding courteous to him, and he heard much talk about him of the wealth of the lands of St. Mary's at Higham, and how it was flourishing, and of the abbot how mighty he was, so that he might do what he would, and that his will was to help and to give, and be blithe with all men, and folk told of turmoil and war in other lands, and praised the peace of Higham on the way. Ralph listened to all this, and smiled, and said to himself that to another man this might well be the end of his journey for that time, but for him all this peace and well-being was not enough, for though it were a richer land than Upmeads, yet to the peace and the quiet he was well used, and he had come forth not for the winning of fatter peace, but to try what new thing his youth and his might and his high hope and his good hap might accomplish. So when the supper was over, and the wine and spices had been brought, the guest hall began to thin somewhat, and the brother who had brought Ralph thither came to him and said, "Fair lord, it were no wise ill if ye went forth, as others of our guests have done, to see the deeds of Midsummer Eve that shall be done in the great square in honour of Holy John, for our manor therein at Higham has been much thought of. Look, my son." He pointed to the windows of the hall therewith, and lo! They grew yellow and bright with some fire without, as if a new fiery day had been born out of the dusk of the summer night, for the light that shone through the windows outdid the candlelight in the hall. Ralph started thereat and laid his right hand to the place of his sword, which indeed he had left with the chamberlain, but the monk laughed and said, "Fear nothing, lord, there is no foeman in Higham, come now, lest thou be belated of the show." So he led Ralph forth, and into the square, where there was a space appointed for the brethren and their guests to see the plays, and the square was now so full of folk that it seemed like as if that there were no one man in the streets which were erewhile so thronged. There were rows of men-at-arms and bright armour also to keep the folk in their places, like as hurdles pen the sheep up, howbeit they were nowise rough with folk, but humble and courteous. Many and many were the torches and cressets burning steadily in the calm air, so that, as aforesaid, night was turned into day. But on the scaffold aforesaid were standing bright and gay figures, whose names or what they were Ralph had no time to ask. Now the bells began to clash from the great tower of the minster, and in a little while they had clashed themselves into order and rang clear and tunably for a space, and while they were ringing, lo! Those gay-clad people departed from the scaffold, and a canvas painted like a mountainside, rocky and with caves therein,
was drawn up at the back of it. Then came thereon one clad like a king, holding a fair maiden by the hand, and with him was a dame richly clad and with a crown on her head. So these two kissed the maiden, and lamented over her, and went their ways, and the maiden left alone sat down upon a rock and covered up her face and wept. And while Ralph wondered what this might mean, or what grieved the maiden, there came creeping, as it were from out of a cranny of the rocks, a worm huge-headed and covered over with scales that glittered in the torchlight. Then Ralph sprang up in his place, for he feared for the maiden that the worm would devour her, but the monk who sat by him pulled him down by the skirt, and laughed and said, "Sit still, lord. For the champion also has been provided." Then Ralph sat down again somewhat abashed and looked on, yet was his heart in his mouth the while. And so while the maiden stood as one astonied before the worm, who gaped upon her with wide open mouth, there came forth from a cleft in the rocks a goodly knight who bore silver, a red cross, and he had his sword in his hand, and he fell upon the worm to smite him, and the worm ramped up against him, and there was battle betwixt them, while the maiden knelt and I with her hands clasped together. Then Ralph knew that this was a play of the fight of Saint George with the worm, so he sat silent till the champion had smitten off the worm's head and had come to the maiden and kissed and embraced her, and shown her the grisly head. Then presently came many folk onto the scaffold, to wit, the king and queen who were the father and mother of the maiden, and a bishop clad in very fair vestments, and knights withal, and they stood about Saint George and the maiden, and with them were minstrels who fell to playing upon harps and fiddles, while others some fell to singing a sweet song in honor of Saint George, and the maiden delivered. So when it was all done, the monk said, "This play is set forth by the men-at-arms of our Lord Abbot, who have great devotion towards Saint George, and he is their friend and their good lord. But hereafter will be other plays, of wild men and their feasting in the woods in the golden age of the world, and that is done by the scribes and the limners. And after that will be a pageant of Saint Agnes ordered by the clothiers and the webbers, which be both many and deft in this good town. Albeit thou art a young man and hast ridden far today belike, and mayhappen thou wilt not be able to endure it, so it may be well to bring thee out of this throng straightway. Moreover I have bethought me, that there is much of what is presently to come which we shall see better from the minster roof, or even it may be from the tower. Wilt thou come then?" Ralph had liefer have sat there and seen all the plays to the end, for they seemed to him exceeding fair, and like to ravish the soul from the body. Howbeit, being shamefaced, he knew not how to gainsay the brother, who took him by the hand, and led him through the press to the west front of the minster, where on the north side was a little door in a nook. So they went up a stair therein a good way till they came into a gallery over the western door, and looking forth thence Ralph deemed that he could have seen a long way had daylight been, for it was higher than the tops of the highest houses. So there they abode a space looking down on the square and its throng, and the bells, which had been ringing when they came up, now ceased a while. But presently there arose great shouts and clamor amongst the folk below, and they could see men with torches drawing near to the pile of wood, and then all of a sudden shot up from it a great spiring flame, and all the people shouted together, while the bells broke out again over their heads. Then the brother pointed aloof with his finger and said, "Lo you! Fair lord, how Bale speaks to Bale all along the headlands of the down country, and below there in the thorps by the river." Forsooth Ralph saw fire after fire break out to the westward, and the brother said, "And if we stood over the high altar and looked east, ye would see more of such fires and many more, and all these bales are piled up and lighted by vassals and villains of my lord abbot. Now tonight they are but mere midsummer bale fires, but doubt ye not that if there came war into the land each one of these bales would mean at least a half score of stout men, archers and men-at-arms, all ready to serve their lord at all adventure. All this the tyrants round about, that hate holy church and oppress the poor, know full well, therefore we live in peace in these lands." Ralph hearkened, but said naught, for amidst all this flashing of fire and flame, and the crying out of folk, and the measured clash of the bells so near him, his thought was confused, and he had no words ready to hand. But the monk turned from the parapet and looked him full in the face and said to him, "Thou art a fair young man, and strong, and of gentle blood as I deem, and thou seemest to me to have the lucky look in thine eyes. Now I tell thee that if thou wert to take service with my lord thou shouldest never rue it. Yea, why shouldest thou not wax in his service, and become his captain of captains, which is an office meet for kings?" Ralph looked on him, but answered not, for he could not gather his thoughts for an answer, and the brother said, "Think of it, I bid thee, fair young lord, and be sure that nowhere shalt thou have a better livelihood, not even wert thou a king's son, for the children of my lord abbot are such that none dareth to do them any displeasure, neither is any overlord as good as his holy church." "Yea," said Ralph, "doubtless thou sayest sooth, yet I wot not that I am come forth to seek a master." Said the brother, "Nay, do but see the lord abbot, as thou mayst do tomorrow, If thou wilt. I would have his blessing, said Ralph. No less shalt thou have, said the brother, but look you down yonder, for I can see tokens that my lord is even now coming forth. Ralph looked down and beheld the folk parting to right and left, and a lane made amidst the throng, guarded by men-at-arms mingled with the cross-bearers and brethren, and the sound of trumpets blared forth over the noises of the throng. If the Lord Abbot cometh, said Ralph, I were fain of his blessing tonight before I sleep, so go we down straightway that I may kneel before him with the rest.
What? Said the monk, wilt thou, my lord, kneel amongst all these burgesses and vavassors when thou mightest see the abbot in his own chamber face to face alone with him?
Father, said Ralph, I am no great man, and I must needs depart betimes tomorrow, for I perceive that here are things too mighty and overmastering for such as I be.
Well, said the monk, yet mayst thou come back again, so at present I will make no more words about it.
So they went down, and came out amidst the throng, above which the bale still flared high, making the summer night as light as day. The brother made way for Ralph, so that they stood in the front row of folk. They had not been there 1 minute ere they heard the sound of the brethren singing, and the abbot came forth out of the lane that went down to the gate. Then all folk went down upon their knees, and thus abode him. Right so Ralph deemed that he felt some one pull his sleeve, but in such a throng that was not of a wonder, howbeit, he turned and looked to his left, whence came the tug, and saw kneeling beside him a tall man at arms, who bore a sallet on his head in such wise that it covered all his face save the point of his chin. Then Ralph bethought him of the man of the leafless tree, and he looked to see what armory the man bore on his coat, but he had nothing save a loose frock of white linen over his hauberk. Nevertheless, he heard a voice in his ear, which said, the second time. Whereon he deemed that it was verily that same man, yet had he naught to do to lay hold on him, and he might not speak with him, for even therewith came the abbot in garments all of gold, going afoot under a canopy of bodkin, with a precious mitre on his head, and the crozier borne before him, as if he had been a patriarch, for he was an exceeding mighty lord. Ralph looked hard on him as he passed by, blessing the folk with upraised hand, and he saw that he was a tall spare man, clean-shaven, and thin-faced, but no old man, belike scarce of 50 winters. Ralph caught his eye, and he smiled on the goodly young man so kindly, that for a moment Ralph deemed that he would dwell in St. Mary's house for a little while, for, thought he, if my father, or Nicholas, hear of me therein, they must even let me alone to abide here. Therewith the abbot went forth to his place, and sat him down under a goodly cloth of estate, and folk stood up again, but when Ralph looked for the man in the sallet he could see naught of him. Now when the abbot was set down, men made a clear ring round about the bale, and there came into the said ring 12 young men, each clad in naught save a goatskin, and with garlands of leaves and flowers about their middles. They had with them a wheel done about with straw and hemp paved with pitch and brimstone. They set fire to the same, and then trundled it blazing round about the bale 12 times. Then came to them 12 damsels clad in such like guise as the young men. Then both bands, the young men and the maidens, drew near to the bale, which was now burning low, and stood about it, and joined hands, and so danced round it a while, and meantime the fiddles played an uncouth tune merrily. Then they sundered, and each couple of men and maids leapt backward and forward over the fire, and when they had all leapt, came forward men with buckets of water which they cast over the dancers till it ran down them in streams. Then was all the throng mingled together, and folk trod the embers of the bale underfoot, and scattered them hither and thither all over the square. All this while men were going about with pitchers of wine and ale, and other good drinks, and every man drank freely what he would, and there was the greatest game and joyance. But now was Ralph exceeding weary, and he said, Father, mightest thou lead me out of this throng, and show me some lair where I may sleep in peace, I would thank thee blithely. As he spake there sounded a great horn over the square, and the abbot rose in his place and blessed all the people once more. Then said the monk, Come then, Fairfield Lord, now shalt thou have thy will of bed. And he laughed therewith, and drew Ralph out of the throng and brought him into the abbey, and into a fair little chamber, on the wall whereof was pictured Saint Christopher, and Saint Julian the Lord and Friend of Wayfarers. Then he brought Ralph the wine and spices, and gave him good night, and went his ways. As Ralph put the raiment from off him he said to himself, A long day forsooth, so long that I should have thought no day could have held all that has befallen me. So many strange things have I seen, that surely my dreams shall be full of them, for even now I seem to see them, though I waken. So he lay down in his bed and slept, and dreamed that he was fishing with an angle in a deep of Upmeath water, and he caught many fish, but after a while whatsoever he caught was but of gilded paper stuffed with wool, and at last the water itself was gone, and he was casting his angle onto a dry road. Therewith he awoke and saw that day was dawning, and heard the minster clock strike three, and heard the thrushes singing their first song in the prior's garden. Then he turned about and slept, and dreamed no more till he woke up in the bright sunny morning. Chapter 6. Ralph goeth his ways from the Abbey of St. Mary at Higham. It was the monk who had been his guide the day before who had now waked him, and he stood by the bedside holding a great bowl of milk in his hand, and as Ralph sat up, and rubbed his eyes, with all his youthful sloth upon him, the monk laughed and said, "That is well, Lord, that is well. I love to see a young man so sleepy in the morning, it is a sign of thriving, and I see thou art thriving heartily for the time when thou shalt come back to us to lead my lord's host in battle." "Where be the balefires?" said Ralph, not yet fully awake. "Where be they?" said the brother, "where be they? They be sunken to cold coals long ago, like many a man's desires and hopes, who hath not yet laid his head on the bosom of the mother, that is Holy Church. Come, my lord, arise, and drink the monk's wine of morning, and then if ye must need ride, ride betimes, and ride hard, for the wood perilous beginneth presently as ye wend your ways, and it were well for thee to reach the Burg of the Four Friths ere thou be benighted. For, son, there be untoward things in the wood, and though some of them be of those for whom Christ's cross was shapen, yet have they forgotten hell, and hope not for heaven, and their byword is, thou shalt lack ere I lack. Furthermore there are worse wights in the wood than they be, God save us. But against them have I a good hauberk, a neckard which I will give thee, son, in token that I look to see thee again at the lovely house of Mary our mother." Ralph had taken the bowl and was drinking, but he looked over the brim, and saw how the monk drew from his frock a pair of beads, as like to Dame Catherine's gift as one pea to another, save that at the end thereof was a little box shapen crosswise. Ralph emptied the bowl hastily, got out of bed, and sat on the bed naked, save that on his neck was Dame Catherine's gift. He reached out his hand and took the beads from the monk and reddened therewith, as was his wont when he had to begin a contest in words, but he said, "I thank thee, father, yet God wot if these beads will lie sweetly alongside the collar which I bear on my neck as now, which is the gift of a dear friend." The monk made up a solemn countenance and said, "Thou sayest sooth, my son, it is most like that my chaplet, which hath been blessed time was by the holy Richard, is no meet fellow for the gift of some light love of thine, or even," quoth he, noting Ralph's flush deepen, and his brow knit, "or even if it were the gift of a well-willer, yet belike it is a worldly gift, therefore, since thy journey is with peril, thou wert best do it off and let me keep it for thee till thou comest again." Now as he spake he looked anxiously, nay, it may be said greedily, at the young man. But Ralph said naught, for in his heart he was determined not to chaffer away his gossip's gift for any shaveling's token. Yet he knew not how to set his youthful words against the father's wisdom, so he stood up, and got a shirt into his hand, and as he did it over his head he fell to singing to himself a song of eventide of the high house of Upmeads, the words whereof were somewhat like to these. "Art thou man, art thou maid, through the long grass a-going? For short shirt thou bearest, and no beard I see, and the last wind ere moonrise about thee is blowing. Wouldst thou meet with thy maid nor look'st thou for me? Bright shineth the moon now, I see thy gown longer, and down by the hazels Joan meeteth her lad, but hard as thy palm, lass, and scarcely were stronger what's grip than thine hand kiss that maketh me glad. And now as the candles shine on us and over, full shapely thy feet are, but brown on the floor, as the barefooted mowers amidst of the clover when the gowk's note is broken and mid-June is o'er. Oh hard are mine hand palms because on the ridges I carried the reap hook and smote for thy sake, and in the hot noontide I beat off the midges as thou slept'st neath the linden or loath to awake. And brown are my feet now because the sun burneth high up on the downside amidst of the sheep, and there in the hollow wherefrom the wind turneth, thou layst in my lap while I sung thee to sleep. O friend of the earth, O come nigher and nigher, thou art sweet with the sun's kiss as meads of the may, or the rocks of the waste, or the water and fire, will I follow thee, love, till earth wanneth away." The monk hearkened to him with knitted brow, and as one that liketh not the speech of his fellow, though it be not wise to question it, then he went out of the chamber, but left the pair of beads lying in the window. But Ralph clad himself in haste, and when he was fully clad, went up to the window and took the beads in his hand, and looked into them curiously and turned them over, but left them lying there. Then he went forth also, and came into the forecourt of the house, and found there a squire of the men-at-arms with his weapons and horse, who helped him to do on his war gear. So then, just as he was setting his foot in the stirrup, came the brother again, with his face once more grown smiling and happy, and in his left hand he held the chaplet, but did not offer it to Ralph again, but nodded his head to him kindly, and said, "Now, Lord, I can see by thy face that thou art set on beholding the fashion of this world, and most like it will give thee the rue. Then came a word into Ralph's mouth, and he said, Wilt thou tell me, father, whose work was the world's fashion? The monk reddened, but answered not, and Ralph spake again. Forsooth, did the craftsman of it fumble over his work? Then the monk scowled, but presently he enforced himself to speak blithely, and said, Such matters are over high for my speech or thine, Lord, but I tell thee, who knoweth, that there are men in this house who have tried the world and found it wanting. Ralph smiled, and said stammering, Father, did the world try them, and find them wanting perchance? Then he reddened, and said, Are ye verily all such as this in this house? Who then is it who hath made so fair a lordship, and so goodly a governance for so many people? Know ye not at all of the world's ways? Fair sir, said the monk sternly, they that work for us work for the Lord and all his servants. Yea, said Ralph, so it is, and will the Lord be content with the service of him whom the devil hath cast out because he hath found him a dastard? The monk frowned, yet smiled somewhat withal, and said, Sir, thou art young, but thy wits are over old for me, but there are they in this house who may answer thee featly, men who have read the books of the wise men of the heathen, and the doctors of Holy Church, and are even now making books for the scribes to copy. Then his voice softened, and he said, Dear Lord, we should be right fain of thee here, but since thou must needs go, go with my blessing, and double blessing shalt thou have when thou comest back to us. Then Ralph remembered his promise to the shepherds and took a gold crown from his pouch, and said, Father, I pray thee say a mass for the shepherd downsman, and this is for the offering. The monk praised the gift and the bidding, and kissed Ralph, who clomb into his saddle, and the brother hospitalier brought him his wallet with good meat and drink therein for the way. Then Ralph shook his rein, and rode out of the abbey gate, smiling at the lay brethren and the men-at-arms who hung about there. But he sighed for pleasure when he found himself in the street again, and looked on the shops of the chapmen and the booths of the petty craftsmen, as shoe-smiths and glovers, and tinsmiths and coppersmiths, and horners and the like, and the folk that he met as he rode toward the southern gate seemed to him merry and in good case, and goodly to look on. And he thought it pleasant to gaze on the damsels in the street, who were fair and well clad, and there were a many of them about his way now, especially as he drew nigh the gate before the streets branched off, for folk were coming in from the countryside with victual and other wares for the town and the abbey, and surely as he looked on some of the maidens he deemed that Hall Song of Upmeads a good one. Chapter 7. The Maiden of Borden Abbas. So when he threw the gate, and many, both of men and maids gazed at him, for he was fair to look on, but none meddled with him. There was a goodly faubourg outside the gate, and therein were fair houses, not a few, with gardens and orchards about them, and when these were passed he rode through very excellent meadows lying along the water, which he crossed thrice, once by a goodly stone bridge and twice by fords, for the road was straight, and the river wound about much. After a little while the road led him off the plain meads into a country of little hills and dales, the hillsides covered with vineyards and orchards, and the dales plenteous of cornfields, and now amongst these dales Heim was hidden from him. Through this tillage and vineland he rode a good while, and thought he had never seen a goodlier land, and as he went he came on husbandmen and women of the country going about their business, yet were they not too busy to gaze on him, and most greeted him, and with some he gave and took a little speech. These people also he deemed well before the world, for they were well clad and buxom, and made no great haste as they went, but looked about them as though they deemed the world worth looking at, and as if they had no fear either of a blow or a hard word for a loitering. So he rode till it was noon, and he was amidst a little thorp of grey stone houses, trim enough, in a valley wherein there was more of wild wood trees and less of fruit bearers than those behind him. In the thorp was a tavern with the sign of the Nicholas, so Ralph deemed it but right to enter a house which was under the guard of his master and friend, therefore he lighted down and went in. Therein he found a lad of 15 winters, and a maiden spinning, they two alone, who hailed him and asked his pleasure, and he bade them bring him meat and drink, and look to his horse, for that he had a mind to rest a while. So they brought him bread and flesh, and good wine of the hillside, in a little hall well arrayed as of its kind, and he sat down and the damsel served him at table, but the lad, who had gone to see to his horse, did not come back. So when he had eaten and drunk, and the damsel was still there, he looked on her and saw that she was sad and drooping of aspect, and whereas she was a fair maiden, Ralph, now that he was full, fell to pitying her, and asked her what was amiss. For, said he, thou art fair and ailest not, that is clear to see, neither dwellest thou in penury, but by seeming hast enough and to spare. Or art thou a servant in this house, and hath any one misused thee? She wept at his words, for indeed he spoke softly to her. Then she said, Young Lord, thou art kind, and it is thy kindness that draweth the tears from me, else it were not well to weep before a young man, therefore I pray thee pardon me. As for me, I am no servant, nor has anyone misused me, the folk round about are good and neighborly, and this house and the croft, and a vineyard hard by, all that is mine own and my brother's, that is the lad who hath gone to tend thine horse. Yea, and we live in peace here for the most part, for this thorp, which is called Bordenabas, is a land of the Abbey of Higham, though it be the outermost of its lands, and the abbot is a good lord and a defence against tyrants. All is well with me if one thing were not. What is thy need then? Said Ralph, if perchance I might amend it. And as he looked on her he deemed her yet fairer than he had done at first. But she stayed her weeping and sobbing and said, Sir, I fear me that I have lost a dear friend. How then, said he, why fearest thou, and knowest not? Doth thy friend lie sick between life and death? O sir, she said, it is the wood which is the evil and disease. What wood is that? Said he. She said, the wood Perilous, that lieth betwixt us and the Burg of the Four Friths, and all about the Burg. And, sir, if ye be minded to ride to the Burg today, do it not, for through the wood must thou wend thereto, and ye are young and lovely. Therefore take my rede, and abide till the chapmen wend thither from Higham, who ride many in company. For, look you, fair lord, ye have asked of my grief, and this it is and naught else, that my very earthly love and speech friend rode 5 days ago toward the Burg of the Four Friths all alone through the Wood Perilous, and he is not come back, though we look to see him in 3 days wearing, but his horse has come back, and the reins and the saddle all bloody. And she fell a-weeping with the telling of the tale. But Ralph said, for he knew not what to say, keep a good heart, maiden, maybe he is safe and sound, oft are young men fond to wander wide, even as I myself. She looked at him hard and said, if thou hast stolen thyself away from them that love thee, thou hast done amiss. Though thou art a lord, and so fair as I see thee, yet will I tell thee so much. Ralph reddened and answered not, but deemed the maiden both fair and sweet. But she said, whether thou hast done well or ill, do no worse, but abide till the chapmen come from Higham, on their way to the Burg of the Four Friths. Here mayst thou lodge well and safely if thou wilt. Or if our hall be not dainty enough for thee, then go back to Higham, I warrant me the monks will give thee good guesting as long as thou wilt. Thou art kind, maiden, said Ralph, but why should I tarry for an host? And what should I fear in the wood, as evil as it may be? One man journeying with little wealth, and unknown, and he no weakling, but bearing good weapons, hath naught to dread of strong thieves, whoever rob where it is easiest and gainfulest. And what worse may I meet than strong thieves? But thou mayest meet worse, she said, and therewith fell a-weeping again, and said amidst her tears, O weary on my life! And why should I heed thee when naught heedeth me, neither the saints of God's house, nor the master of it, nor the father and the mother that were once so piteous kind to me? Oh, if I might but drink a draught from the well at the world's end! He turned about on her hastily at that word, for he had risen to depart, being grieved at her grief and wishful to be away from it, since he might not amend it. But now he said eagerly, Where then is that well? Know ye of it in this land? At least I know the hearsay thereof, she said, but as now thou shalt know no more from me thereof, lest thou wander the wider in seeking it. I would not have thy life spilt. Ever as he looked on her he thought her still fairer, and now he looked long on her, saying naught, and she on him and likewise, and the blood rose to her cheeks and her brow, but she would not turn her from his gaze. At last he said, Well then, I must depart, no more learned than I came, but yet am I less hungry and thirsty than I came, and have thou thanks therefore. Therewith he took from his pouch a gold piece of upmeads, which was good, and of the touch of the Easterlings, and held it out to her. And she put out her open hand and he put the money in it, but thought it good to hold her hand a while, and she gainsaid him not. Then he said, Well then, I must needs depart with things left as they are, wilt thou bid thy brother bring hither my horse, for time presses? Yea, she said, and her hand was still in his, yet do thine utmost, yet shalt thou not get to the Burg before nightfall. Oh, wilt thou not tarry? Nay, he said, my heart will not suffer it, lest I deem myself a dastard. Then she reddened again, but as if she were wroth, and she drew her hand away from his and smote her palms together thrice and cried out, Ho, Hugh! Bring hither the knight's horse and be speedy. And she went hither and thither about the hall and into the buttery and back, putting away the victual and vessels from the board and making as if she heeded him not, and Ralph looked on her, and deemed that each way she moved was better than the last, so shapely a fashion she was, and again he bethought him of the even song of the high house at Upmeads, and how it befitted her, for she went barefoot after the manner of maidens who work a field, and her feet were tanned with the sun of hay harvest, but as shapely as might be, but she was clad goodly withal, in a green gown wrought with flowers. So he watched her going to and fro, and at last he said, "Maiden, wilt thou come hither a little, before I depart?" "Yea," she said, and came and stood before him, and he deemed that she was scarce so sad as she had been, and she stood with her hands joined and her eyes downcast. Then he said, "Now I depart. Yet I would say this, that I am sorry of thy sorrow, and now since I shall never see thee more, small would be the harm if I were to kiss thy lips and thy face." And therewith he took her hands in his and drew her to him, and put his arms about her and kissed her many times, and she nothing luta by seeming, and he found her as sweet as may blossom. Thereafter she smiled on him, yet scarce for gladness, and said, "It is not also sure that I shall not see thee again, yet shall I do to thee as thou hast done to me." Therewith she took his face between her hands, and kissed him well favoredly, so that the hour seemed good to him. Then she took him by the hand and led him out of doors to his horse, whereby the lad had been standing a good while, and he when he saw his sister come out with the fair knight he scowled on them, and handled a knife which hung at his girdle, but Ralph heeded him not. As for the damsel, she put her brother aside, and held the stirrup for Ralph, and when he was in the saddle she said to him, "All luck go with thee. Forsooth I deem thee safer in the wood than my word said. Verily I deem that if thou wert to meet a company of feemen, thou wouldest compel them to do thy bidding." "Farewell to thee, maiden," said Ralph, "and mayst thou find thy beloved whole and well, and that speedily. Farewell." She said no more, so he shook his rein and rode his ways, but looked over his shoulder presently and saw her standing yet barefoot on the dusty highway, shading her eyes from the afternoon sun and looking after him, and he waved his hand to her and so went his ways between the houses of the thorpe. Chapter 8. Ralph cometh to the Wood Perilous. An adventure therein. Now when he was clear of the thorpe the road took him out of the dale, and when he was on the hill's brow he saw that the land was of other fashion from that which lay behind him. For the road went straight through a rough waste, no pasture, save for mountain sheep or goats, with a few bushes scattered about it, and beyond this the land rose into a long ridge, and on the ridge was a wood thick with trees, and no break in them. So on he rode, and soon passed that waste, which was dry and parched, and the afternoon sun was hot on it, so he deemed it good to come under the shadow of the thick trees, which at the first were holy beech trees, for it was now the hottest of the day. There was still a beaten way between the tree boles, though not over wide, albeit, a highway, since it pierced the wood. So thereby he went at a soft pace for the saving of his horse, and thought but little of all he had been told of the perils of the way, and not a little of the fair maid whom he had left behind at the thorpe. After a while the thick beechwood gave out, and he came into a place where great oaks grew, fair and stately, as though some lord's wood reeve had taken care that they should not grow over close together, and betwixt them the greensward was fine, unbroken, and flowery. Thereby as he rode he beheld deer, both buck and hart and roe, and other wild things, but for a long while no man. The afternoon wore and still he rode the oakwood, and deemed it a goodly forest for the greatest king on earth. At last he came to where another road crossed the way he followed, and about the crossway was the ground clearer of trees, while beyond it the trees grew thicker, and there was some underwood of holly and thorn as the ground fell off as towards a little dale. There Ralph drew rein, because he doubted in his mind which was his right road toward the Burg of the Four Friths, so he got off his horse and abode a little, if perchance any might come by. He looked about him, and noted on the road that crossed his, and the sward about it, the sign of many horses having gone by, and deemed that they had passed but a little while. So he lay on the ground to rest him and let his horse stray about and bite the grass, for the beast loved him and would come at his collar as whistle. Ralph was drowsy when he lay down, and though he said to himself that he would nowise go to sleep, yet as oft happens, he had no defense to make against sleepiness, and presently his hands relaxed, his head fell aside, and he slept quietly. When he woke up in a little space of time, he knew at once that something had awaked him and that he had not had his sleep out, for in his ears was the trampling of horse hoofs and the clashing of weapons and loud speech of men. So he leapt up hastily, and while he was yet scarce awake, took to whistling on his horse, but even therewith those men were upon him, and two came up to him and laid hold of him, and when he asked them what they would, they bade him hold his peace. Now his eyes cleared, and he saw that those men were in goodly war gear, and bore coats of plate, and queer bouilly, or of bright steel, they held long spears and were girt with good swords, there was a pennon with them, green, whereon was done a golden tower, embattled, amidst of four white ways, and the same token bore many of the men on their coats and sleeves. Unto this same pennon he was brought by the two men who had taken him, and under it, On a white horse, sat a knight bravely armed at all points with a tower in four ways on his green surcoat, and beside him was an ancient man at arms, with naught but an oak wreath on his bare head, and his white beard falling low over his coat, but behind these twain a tall young man, also on a white horse and very gaily clad, upheld the pennon. On one side of these three were five men, unarmed, clad in green coats, with a leafless tree done on them in gold. They were stout carless, bearded and fierce-faced, their hands were bound behind their backs and their feet tied together under their horses' bellies. The company of those about the knight, Ralph deemed, would number 10 score men. So when those twain stayed Ralph before the knight, he turned to the old man and said, "It is of no avail asking this slither lad if he be of them or number, for no will be his answer. But what sayest thou, Oliver?" The ancient man drew closer to Ralph and looked at him up and down and all about, for those two turned him about as if he had been a joint of flesh on the roasting jack, and at last he said, "His beard is sprouting, else might ye have taken him for a mate of theirs, one of those of whom we wot. But to say sooth, I seem to know the fashion of his gear, even as Duke Jacob knew Joseph's tabard. So ask him whence he is, Lord, and if he lie, then I bid bind him and lead him away, that we may have a true tale out of him. Otherwise let him go and take his chance, for we will not waste the bread of the good town on him." The knight looked hard on Ralph, and spake to him somewhat courteously. "Whence art thou, fair sir, and what is thy name? For we have many foes in the wildwood." Ralph reddened as he answered, "I am of Upmeads beyond the down country, and I pray thee let me be gone on mine errands. It is meet that thou deal with thine own robbers and reavers, but not with me." Then cried out one of the bounden men, "Thou liest, lad, we be no robbers." But he of the knight's company who stood by him smote the man on the mouth and said, "Hold thy peace, runagate. Thou shalt give tongue tomorrow when the hangman hath thee under his hands." The knight took no heed of this, but turned to the ancient warrior and said, "Hath he spoken truth so far?"
"Yea, Sir Aymer," quoth Oliver, "and now meseems I know him better than he knoweth me." Therewith he turned to Ralph and said, "How fareth Long Nicholas, my lord?" Ralph reddened again. "He is well," said he. Then said the knight, "Is the young man of a worthy house, Oliver?" But ere the elder could speak, Ralph brake in and said, "Old warrior, I bid thee not to tell out my name, as thou lovest Nicholas." Old Oliver laughed and said, "Well, Nicholas and I have been friends in a way, as well as foes, and for the sake of the old days his name shall help thee, young lord." Then he said to his knight, "Yea, Sir Aymer, he is of a goodly house and an ancient. But thou hearest how he adjureth me. Ye shall let his name alone." The knight looked silently on Ralph for a while, then he said, "Wilt thou wend with us to the Burg of the Four Friths, fair sewer? Wert thou not faring thither? Or what else dost thou in the wood perilous?" Ralph turned it over in his mind, and though he saw no cause why he should not join himself to their company, yet something in his heart forbade him to rise to the fly too eagerly, so he did but say, "I am seeking adventures, fair lord." The knight smiled, "Then mayst thou fill thy budget with them if thou goest with us," quoth he. Now Ralph did not know how he might gainsay so many men-at-arms in the long run, though he were scarce willing to go, so he made no haste to answer, and even therewith came a man running, through the wood up from the dale, a long, lean carle, meet for running, with brogues on his feet, and naught else but a shirt. The company parted before him to right and left to let him come to the knight, as though he had been looked for, and when he was beside him, the knight leaned down while the carle spake softly to him and all men drew out of earshot. And when the carle had given his message the knight drew himself straight up in his saddle again and lifted up his hand and cried out, "Oliver! Oliver! Lead on the way thou wottest! Spur! Spur, all men!" Therewith he blew one blast from a horn which hung at his saddle bow, the runner leapt up behind old Oliver, and the whole company went off at a smart trot somewhat southeast, slantwise of the crossroads, where the wood was not cumbered with undergrowth. And presently they were all gone to the last horsetail, and no man took any more note of Ralph. Chapter 9. Another Adventure in the Wood Perilous. Ralph left alone pondered a little, and thought that he would by no means go hastily to the Burg of the Four Friths. Said he to himself, "This want way is all unlike to the one near our house at home, for belike adventures shall befall here. I will even abide here for an hour or two, but will have my horse by me and keep awake, lest something hap to me unawares." Therewith he whistled for Falcon his horse, and the beast came to him, and whinnied for love of him, and Ralph smiled and tied him to a sapling anigh, and himself sat down on the grass, and pondered many things, as to what folk were about at Upmeads, and how his brethren were faring, and it was now about 5 hours after noon, and the sun's rays fell aslant through the boughs of the noble oaks,
And the scent of the grass and bracken trodden by the horse hoofs of that company went up into the warm summer air. A while he sat musing but awake, though the faint sound of a little stream in the dale below mingled with all the lesser noises of the forest did its best to soothe him to sleep again, and presently had its way with him, for he leaned his head back on the bracken, and in a minute or two was sleeping once more and dreaming some dream made up of masterless memories of past days. When he awoke again he lay still a little while, wondering where in the world he was, but as the drowsiness left him, he arose and looked about, and saw that the sun was sinking low and gilding the oak boles red. He stood a while and watched the gambols of three hares, who had drawn nigh him while he slept, and now noted him not, and a little way he saw through the trees a hart and two hinds going slowly from grass to grass, feeding in the cool eventide, but presently he saw them raise their heads and amble off down the slope of the little dale, and therewith he himself turned his face sharply toward the northwest, for he was fine-eared as well as sharp-eyed, and on a little wind which had just arisen came down to him the sound of horse hoofs once more. So he went up to Falcon and loosed him, and stood by him bridle in hand, and looked to it that his sword was handy to him, and he hearkened, and the sound drew nigher and nigher to him. Then lightly he got into the saddle and gathered the reins into his left hand, and sat peering up the trodden wood glades, lest he should have to ride for his life suddenly. Therewith he heard voices talking roughly and a man whistling, and athwart the glade of the wood from the northwest, or thereabout, came new folk, and he saw at once that there went two men a horseback and armed, so he drew his sword and abode them close to the want ways. Presently they saw the shine of his war gear, and then they came but a little nigher ere they drew rein, and sat on their horses looking toward him. Then Ralph saw that they were armed and clad as those of the company which had gone before. One of the armed men rode a horse length after his fellow, and bore a long spear over his shoulder. But the other who rode first was girt with a sword, and had a little axe hanging about his neck, and with his right hand he seemed to be leading something, Ralph could not see what at first, as his left side was turned toward Ralph and the want way. Now, as Ralph looked, he saw that at the spearman's saddle-bow was hung a man's head, red-haired and red-bearded, for this man now drew a little nigher, and cried out to Ralph in a loud and merry voice, "Hail, knight! Whither away now, that thou ridest the greenwood sword in hand?" Ralph was just about to answer somewhat, when the first man moved a little nigher, and as he did so he turned so that Ralph could see what beat it on his right hand, and lo! He was leading a woman by a rope tied about her neck, though her hands were loose, as though he were bringing a cow to market. When the man stayed his horse she came forward and stood within the slack of the rope by the horse's head, and Ralph could see her well, that though she was not to say naked, her raiment was but scanty, for she had naught to cover her save one short and straight little coat of linen, and shoes on her feet. Yet Ralph deemed her to be of some degree, whereas he caught the gleam of gold and gems on her hands, and there was a golden chaplet on her head. She stood now by the horse's head with her hands folded, looking on, as if what was tiding and to betide, were but a play done for her pleasure. So when Ralph looked on her, he was silent a while, and the spearman cried out again, "Ho, young man, wilt thou speak, or art thou dumbfoundered for fear of us?" But Ralph knit his brows, and was first red and then pale, for he was both wroth, and doubtful how to go to work, but he said, "I ride to seek adventures, and here meseemeth is one come to hand. Or what will ye with a woman?" Said the man who had the woman in tow, "Trouble not thine head therewith, we lead her to her due doom. As for thee, be glad that thou art not her fellow, since forsooth thou seemest not to be one of them, so go thy ways in peace." "No foot further will I go," said Ralph, "till ye loose the woman and let her go, or else tell me what her worst deed is." The man laughed, and said, "That were a long tale to tell, and it is little like that thou shalt live to hear the ending thereof." Therewith he wagged his head at the spearman, who suddenly let his spear fall into the rest, and spurred, and drave on at Ralph all he might. There and then had the tale ended, but Ralph, who was weary, though he were young, and had Falcon well in hand, turned his wrist and made the horse swerve, so that the man-at-arms missed his attaint, but could not draw rein speedily enough to stay his horse, and as he passed by all bowed over his horse's neck, Ralph got his sword two-handed and rose in his stirrups and smote his mightiest, and the sword caught the foeman on the neck betwixt sallet and jack, and naught held before it, neither leather nor ring mail, so that the man's head was nigh smitten off, and he fell clattering from his saddle, yet his stirrups held him, so that his horse went dragging him on earth as he galloped over rough and smooth betwixt the trees of the forest. Then Ralph turned about to deal with his fellow, and even through the wrath and fury of the slaying saw him clear and bright against the trees as he sat handling his axe doubtfully, but the woman was fallen back again somewhat. But even as Ralph raised his sword and pricked forward, the woman sprang as light as a leopard onto the saddle behind the foeman, and wound her arms about him and dragged him back just as he was raising his axe to smite her, and as Ralph rode forward she cried out to him, "Smite him, smite! O lovely creature of God!" Therewith was Ralph beside them, and though he were loath to slay a man held in the arms of a woman, yet he feared lest the man should slay her with some knife stroke unless he made haste, so he thrust his sword through him, and the man died at once, and fell headlong off his horse, dragging down the woman with him. Then Ralph lighted down from his horse, and the woman rose up to him, her white smock all bloody with the slain man. Nevertheless was she as calm and stately before him, as if she were sitting on the dais of a fair hall, so she said to him, "Young warrior, thou hast done well and knightly, and I shall look to it that thou have thy reward. And now I rede thee go not to the Burg of the Four Friths, for this tale of thee shall get about and they shall take thee, if it were out of the very Frith stool, and therefore thee should be the scourge and the gibbet, for they of that burg be robbers and murderers merciless. Yet well it were that thou ride hence presently, for those be behind my tormentors whom thou hast slain, who will be as an host to thee, and thou mayst not deal with them. If thou follow my rede, thou wilt take the way that goeth hence east away, and then shalt thou come to Hampton _, where the folk are peaceable and friendly." He looked at her hard as she spake, and noted that she spake but slowly, and turned red and white and red again as she looked at him. But whatever she did, and in spite of her poor attire, he deemed he had never seen woman so fair. Her hair was dark red, but her eyes grey, and light at whiles and yet at whiles deep, her lips betwixt thin and full, but yet when she spoke or smiled clad with all enticements, her chin round and so wrought as none was ever better wrought, her body strong and well knit, tall she was, with fair and large arms, and limbs most goodly of fashion, of which but little was hidden, since her coat was but thin and scanty. But whatever may be said of her, no man would have deemed her aught save most lovely. Now her face grew calm and stately again as it was at the first, and she laid a hand on Ralph's shoulder, and smiled in his face and said, "Surely thou art fair, though thy strokes be not light." Then she took his hand and caressed it, and said again, "Dost thou deem that thou hast done great things, fair child? Maybe. Yet some will say that thou hast but slain two butchers, and if thou wilt say that thou hast delivered me, yet it may be that I should have delivered myself ere long. Nevertheless hold up thine heart, for I think that greater things await thee." Then she turned about, and saw the dead man, how his feet yet hung in the stirrups as his fellows had done, save that the horse of this one stood nigh still, only reaching his head down to crop a mouthful of grass, so she said, "Take him away, that I may mount on his horse." So he drew the dead man's feet out of the stirrups, and dragged him away to where the bracken grew deep, and laid him down there, so to say hidden. Then he turned back to the lady, who was pacing up and down near the horse as the beast fed quietly on the cool grass. When Ralph came back she took the reins in her hand and put one foot in the stirrup as if she would mount at once, but suddenly lighted down again, and turning to Ralph, cast her arms about him, and kissed his face many times, blushing red as a rose meantime. Then lightly she gat her up into the saddle, and bestrode the beast, and smote his flanks with her heels, and went her ways riding speedily toward the southeast, so that she was soon out of sight. But Ralph stood still looking the way she had gone and wondering at the adventure, and he pondered her words and held debate with himself whether he should take the road she bade him. And he said within himself, "Hitherto have I been safe and have got no scratch of a weapon upon me, and this is a place by seeming for all adventures, and little way moreover shall I make in the night if I must needs go to Hampton _, where dwell those peaceable people, and it is now growing dusk already. So I will abide the morning hereby, but I will be wary and let the wood cover me if I may." Therewith he went and drew the body of the slain man down into a little hollow where the bracken was high and the brambles grew strong, so that it might not be lightly seen. Then he called to him Falcon, his horse, and looked about for cover nigh the want way, and found a little thin coppice of hazel and sweet chestnut, just where two great oaks had been felled 50 years ago, and looking through the leaves thence, he could see the four ways clearly enough, though it would not be easy for anyone to see him thence. Thither he betook him, and he did the rein off Falcon, but tethered him by a halter in the thickest of the copse, and sat down himself nigher to the outside thereof. He did off his helm and drew what meat he had from out his wallet and ate and drank in the beginning of the summer night, and then sat pondering a while on what had befallen on this second day of his wandering. The moon shone out presently, little clouded, but he saw her not, for though he strove to wake a while, slumber soon overcame him, and nothing waked him till the night was passing, nor did he see aught of that company of which the lady had spoken, and which in sooth came not. Chapter 10. A meeting and a parting in the wood perilous. When the first glimmer of dawn was in the sky he awoke in the fresh morning, and sat up and hearkened, for even as he woke he had heard something, since weariness had made him wakeful. Now he hears the sound of horse hoofs on the hard road, and riseth to his feet and goeth to the very edge of the copse. Looking thence, he saw a rider who was just come to the very crossing of the roads. The newcomer was much muffled in a wide cloak, but he seemed to be a man low of stature. He peered all round about him as if to see if the way were clear, and then alighted down from horseback and let the hood fall off his head, and seemed pondering which way were the best to take. By this time it was grown somewhat lighter, and Ralph, looking hard, deemed that the rider was a woman, so he stepped forward lightly, and as he came onto the open sward about the way, the newcomer saw him and put a foot into the stirrup to mount, but yet looked at him over the shoulder, and then presently left the saddle and came forward a few steps as if to meet Ralph, having cast the cloak to the ground. Then Ralph saw that it was none other than the damsel of the hostelry of Bourdin Abbas, and he came up to her and reached out his hand to her, and she took it in both hers and held it and said, smiling, "It is naught save mountains that shall never meet. Here have I followed on thy footsteps, yet knew I not where thou wouldst be in the forest. And now I am glad to have fallen in with thee, for I am going a long way." Ralph looked on her, and him seemed some pain or shame touched his heart, and he said, "I am a knight adventurous, I have naught to do save to seek adventures. Why should I not go with thee?" She looked at him earnestly a while and said, "Nay, it may not be, thou art a lord's son, and I a yeoman's daughter." She stopped, and he said nothing in answer. "Furthermore," said she, "it is a long way, and I know not how long." Again he made no answer, and she said, "I am going to seek the well at the world's end, and to find it and live, or to find it not, and die." He spake after a while, "Why should I not come with thee?" It was growing light now, and he could see that she reddened and then turned pale and set her lips close. Then she said, "Because thou willest it not, because thou hadst liefer make that journey with someone else." He reddened in his turn, and said, "I know of no one else who shall go with me." "Well," she said, "it is all one, I will not have thee go with me." "Yea, and why not?" said he. She said, "Wilt thou swear to me that nought hath happed to thee to change thee betwixt this and Bourdin? If thou wilt, then come with me, if thou wilt not, then refrain thee. And this I say because I see and feel that there is some change in thee since yesterday, so that thou wouldst scarce be dealing truly and being my fellow in this quest, for they that take it up must be single-hearted, and think of nought save the quest and the fellow that is with them." She looked on him sadly, and his many thoughts tongue-tied him a while, but at last he said, "Must thou verily go on this quest?" "Ah," she said, "now since I have seen thee and spoken with thee again, all need there is that I should follow it at once." Then they both kept silence, and when she spoke again her voice was as if she were gay against her will. She said, "Here am I come to these want ways, and there are three roads besides the one I came by, and I want that this that goeth south will bring me to the Burg of the Four Friths, and so much I know of the folk of the said burg that they would mock at me if I asked them of the way to the well at the world's end. And as for the western way, I deem that that will lead me back again to the peopled parts whereof I know, therefore I am minded to take the eastern way. What sayest thou, fair lord?" Said Ralph, "I have heard of late that it leadeth presently to Hampton under the Score, where dwelleth a people of goodwill." "Who told thee this tale?" said she. Ralph answered, reddening again, "I was told by one who seemed to know both of that folk, and of the Burg of the Four Friths, and she said that the folk of Hampton were a good folk, and that they of the burg were evil." The damsel smiled sadly when she heard him say she, and when he had done she said, "And I have heard, and not from yesterday, that at Hampton dwelleth the Fellowship of the Dry Tree, and that those of the Fellowship are robbers and reavers. Nevertheless they will perchance be little worse than the others, and the tale tells that the way to the well at the world's end is by the Dry Tree, so thither will I at all adventure. And now will I say farewell to thee, for it is most like that I shall not see thee again." "Oh, maiden," said Ralph, "why wilt thou not go back to Bourdin Abbas? There I might soon meet thee again, and yet, indeed, I also am like to go to Hampton. Shall I not see thee there?" She shook her head and said, "Nay, since I must go so far, I shall not tarry, and, sooth to say, if I saw thee coming in at one gate I should go out by the other, for why should I dally with a grief that may not be amended? For indeed I want that thou shalt soon forget to wish to see me, either at Bourdin Abbas or elsewhere, so I will say no more than once again farewell." Then she came close to him and put her hands on his shoulders and kissed his mouth, and then she turned away swiftly, caught up her cloak, and gat lightly into the saddle, and so shook her reins and rode away east toward Hampton, and left Ralph standing there downcast and pondering many things. It was still so early in the summer morning, and he knew so little what to do, that presently he turned and walked back to his lair amongst the hazels, and there he lay down, and his thoughts by then were all gone back again to the lovely lady whom he had delivered, and he wondered if he should ever see her again. And, sooth to say, he sorely desired to see her. Amidst such thoughts he fell asleep again, for the night yet owed him something of rest, so young as he was and so hard as he had toiled, both body and mind, during the past day. 1 Chapter 11. Now must Ralph ride for it. When he awoke again the sun was shining through the hazel leaves, though it was yet early. He arose and looked to his horse, and led him out of the hazel copse and stood and looked about him, and lo! A man coming slowly through the wood on Ralph's right hand, and making as it seemed for the want way, he saw Ralph presently, and stopped, and bent a bow which he held in his hand, and then came towards him warily, with the arrow nocked. But Ralph went to meet him with his sword in his sheath, and leading Falcon by the rein, and the man stopped and took the shaft from the string. He had no armor, but there was a little axe and a wood knife in his girdle. He was clad in homespun, and looked like a carle of the countryside. Now he greeted Ralph, and Ralph gave him the selly of the day, and saw that the newcomer was both tall and strong, dark of skin and black-haired, but of a cheerful countenance. He spake frank and free to Ralph, and said, "Whither away, lord, out of the woodland hall, and the dwelling of deer and strong thieves? I would that the deer would choose them a captain, and gather head and destroy the thieves and some few others with them." Said Ralph, "I may scarce tell thee till I know myself. A while ago I was minded for the Burg of the Four Friths, but now I am for Hampton _. "Yea," said the carle, "when the devil drives, to hell must we." "What meanest thou, good fellow?" said Ralph, "is Hampton then so evil an abode?" And indeed it was in his mind that the adventure of the lady led captive bore some evil with it. Said the carle, "If thou wert not a stranger in these parts I need not to answer thy question, but I will answer it presently. Yet not till we have eaten, for I hunger, and have in this wallet both bread and cheese, and thou art welcome to a share thereof, if thou hungerest also, as is most like, whereas thou art young and fresh-colored." "So it is," said Ralph, laughing, "and I also may help to spread this table in the wilderness, since there are yet some crumbs in my wallet. Let us sit down and fall to at once." "By your leave, sir gentleman," said the carle, "we will go a few yards further on, where there is a woodland brook, whereof we may drink when my bottle faileth." "Nay, I may better that," said Ralph, "for I have wherewithal." "Nevertheless," said the carle, "we will go thither, for here is it too open for so small a company as ours, since this one way hath an ill name, and I shall lead thee whereas we shall be somewhat out of the way of murder carless. So come on, if thou trusteth in me." Ralph ye said him, and they went together a furlong from the want way into a little hollow place where through ran a clear stream betwixt thick-leaved alders. The carle led Ralph to the very lip of the water so that the bushes covered them. There they sat down and drew what they had from their wallets, and so fell to meat, and amidst of the meat the carle said, "Fair knight, as I suppose thou art one, I will ask thee if any need draweth thee to Hampton?" Said Ralph, "The need of giving the goby to the Burg of the Four Friths, since I hear tell that the folk thereof be robbers and murderers." "Thou shalt find that out better, lord, by going thither, but I shall tell thee that though men may slay and steal their time and time about, yet in regard to Hampton _, it is heaven, wherein men sin not. And I am one who should know, for I have been long dwelling in hell, that is Hampton, and now am I escaped thence, and am minded for the Burg, if perchance I may be deemed there a man good enough to ride in their host, whereby I might avenge me somewhat on them that have undone me, some of whom meseemeth must have put in thy mouth that word against the Burg. Is it not so?"
"Maybe," said Ralph, "for thou seemest to be a true man." No more he spake though he had half a mind to tell the carle all the tale of that adventure, but something held him back when he thought of that lady and her fairness. Yet again his heart misgave him of what might betide that other maiden at Hampton, and he was unquiet, deeming that he must needs follow her thither. The carle looked on him curiously and somewhat anxiously, but Ralph's eyes were set on something that was not there, or else maybe had he looked closely on the carle he might have deemed that longing to avenge him whereof he spoke did not change his face much, for in truth there was little wrath in it. Now the carle said, "Thou hast a tale which thou deemest unmeet for my ears, as it well may be. Well, thou must speak, or refrain from speaking, what thou wilt, but thou art so fair a young knight, and so blithe with a poor man, and withal I deem that thou mayest help me to some gain and good, that I will tell thee a true tale, and first that the Burg is a good town under a good lord, who is no tyrant nor oppressor of peaceful men, and that thou mayest dwell there in peace as to the folk thereof, who be good folk, albeit they be no dastards to let themselves be cowed by murder carless. And next I will tell thee that the folk of the town of Hampton be verily as harmless and innocent as sheep,
but that they be under evil lords who are not their true lords, who lay heavy burdens on them and torment them even to the destroying of their lives. And lastly, I will tell thee that I was one of those poor people, though not so much a sheep as the more part of them. Therefore have these tyrants robbed me of my croft, and set another man in my house, and me they would have slain had I not fled to the wood that it might govern me. And happy it was for me that I had neither wife, nor chick, nor child, else had they done as they did with my brother, whose wife was too fair for him, since he dwelt at Hampton, so that they took her away from him to make sport for them of a dry tree, who dwell in the castle of the score, who shall be thy masters if thou goest thither. This is my tale, and thine, I say, I ask not, but I deem that thou shalt do ill if thou go not to the burg either with me or by thyself alone, either as a guest, or as a good knight to take service in their host. Now so it was that Ralph was weary, and this time he looked closely at the carle, and found that he spake coldly for a man with so much wrath in his heart, therefore he was in doubt about the thing. Moreover he called to mind the words of the lady whom he had delivered, and her loveliness, and the kisses she had given him, and he was loath to find her a liar, and he was loath also to think that the maiden of Borden had betaken her to so evil a dwelling. So he said, "Friend, I know not that I must needs be a partaker in the strife betwixt Hampton and the burg, or go either to one or the other of these strongholds. Is there no other way out of this wood save by Hampton or the burg? Or no other place in I, where I may rest in peace a while, and then go on mine own errands?" Said the carle, "There is a thorp that lieth somewhat west of the burg, which is called Apthorpe, but it is an open place, not fenced, and is debatable ground, whiles held by them of the burg, whiles by the dry tree, and if thou tarry there, and they of the dry tree take thee, soon is thine errand sped, and if they of the burg take thee, then shalt thou be led into the burg in worse case than thou wouldest be if thou go thereto uncompelled. What sayest thou, therefore? Who shall hurt thee in the burg, a town which is under good and strong law, if thou be a true man, as thou seemest to be? And if thou art seeking adventures, as may well be, thou shalt soon find them there ready to hand. I rede thee come with me to the burg, for, to say sooth, I shall find it somewhat easier to enter therein if I be in the company of thee, a knight and a lord." So Ralph considered and thought that there lay indeed but little peril to him in the burg, whereas both those men with whom he had striven were hushed forever, and there was none else to tell the tale of the battle, save the lady, whose peril from them of the burg was much greater than his. And also he thought that if anything untoward befell, he had some one to fall back on in old Oliver, yet on the other hand he had a hankering after Hampton _, where, to say sooth, he doubted not to see the lady again. So betwixt one thing and the other, speech hung on his lips a while, when suddenly the carle said, "Hist! Thou hast left thy horse without the bushes, and he is whinnying, which indeed he was. There is now no time to lose. To horse straightway, for certainly there are folk at hand, and they may be feemen, and are most like to be." Therewith they both rose and hastened to where Falcon stood just outside the alder bushes, and Ralph leapt a horseback without more ado, and the carle waited no bidding to leap up behind him, and pointing to a glade of the wood which led toward the highway, cried out, "Spur that way, thither. They of the dry tree are abroad this morning. Spur. 'Tis for life or death." Ralph shook the rein and Falcon leapt away without waiting for the spur, while the carle looked over his shoulder and said, "Yonder they come. They are three, and ever they ride well horsed." "Nay, nay. They are four," quoth he, as a shout sounded behind them. "Spur, young lord. Spur. And thine horse is a mettlesome beast. Yea, it will do, it will do." Therewith came to Ralph's ears the sound of their horse hoofs beating the turf, and he spurred indeed, and Falcon flew forth. "Ah," cried the carle. "But take heed, for they see that thy horse is good, and one of them, the last, hath a bent Turk bow in his hand, and is laying an arrow on it, as ever their wont is to shoot a horseback, a turn of thy rein, as if thine horse were shying at a weasel on the road." Ralph stooped his head and made Falcon swerve, and heard therewith the twang of the bowstring, and straightway the shaft flew past his ears. Falcon galloped on, and the carle cried out, "There is the highway toward the burg. Do thy best, do thy best. Lo you again." For the second shaft flew from the Turkish bow, and the noise of the chase was loud behind them. Once again twanged the bowstring, but this time the arrow fell short, and the woodland man, turning himself about as well as he might, shook his clenched fist at the chase, crying out in a voice broken by the gallop, "Ha, thieves! I am Roger of the Ropewalk, I go to twist a rope for the necks of you." Then he spake to Ralph, "They are turning back, they are beaten, and withal they love not the open road, yet slacken not yet, young knight, unless thou lovest thine horse more than thy life, for they will follow on through the thicket on the wayside to see whether thou wert born a fool and hast learned nothing later.
Yea, said Ralph, and now I deem thou wilt tell me that to the burg I needs must.
Yea, forsooth, said the carl, nor shall we be long, riding thus, ere we come to the burg gate.
Yea, or even slower, said Ralph, drawing rein somewhat, for now I deem the chase done, and after all is said, I have no will to slay Falcon, who is one of my friends, as thou perchance mayest come to be another.
Thereafter he went a hand gallop till the wood began to thin, and there were fields of tillage about the highway, and presently Roger said, thou mayst breathe thy nag now, and ride single, for we are amidst friends, not even a score of the Dry Tree dare ride so nigh the burg save by night and cloud.
So Ralph stayed his horse, and he and Roger lighted down, and Ralph looked about him and saw a stone tower builded on a little knoll amidst a wheat field, and below it some simple houses thatched with straw. There were folk moreover working, or coming and going about the fields, who took little heed of the two when they saw them standing quiet by the horse's head, but each and all of these folk, so far as could be seen, had some weapon.
Then said Ralph, good fellow, is this the burg of the four friths?
The carl laughed, and said, simple is the question, sir knight, yonder is a watchtower of the burg, whereunder husbandmen can live, because there be men-at-arms therein. And all round the outskirts of the frank of the burg are there such like towers to the number of 27. For that, say folk, was the tale of the winters of the fair lady who erewhile began the building of the burg, when she was first wedded to the forest lord, who before that building had dwelt, he and his fathers, in thatched halls of timber here and there about the clearings of the wild wood. But now, knight, if thou wilt, thou mayest go on softly toward the gate of the burg, and if thou wilt I will walk beside thy rein, which fellowship, as aforesaid, shall be a gain to me.
Said Ralph, I pray thee come with me, good fellow, and show me how easiest to enter this stronghold.
So, when Falcon was well breathed, they went on, passing through goodly acres and wide meadows, with here and there a homestead on them, and here and there a carl's cot. Then came they to a thorp of the smallest on a rising ground, from the further end of which they could see the walls and towers of the burg. Thereafter right up to the walls were no more houses or cornfields, naught but reaches of green meadows plenteously stored with sheep and kine, and with a little stream winding about them.
2 Chapter 12 Ralph entereth into the burg of the four friths.
When they came up to the wall they saw that it was well builded of good ashlar, and so high that they might not see the roofs of the town because of it, but there were tall towers on it, a many of them, strong and white. The road led up straight to the master gate of the burg, and there was a bailey before it strongly walled, and manned with weapon men, and a captain going about amongst them. But they entered it along with men bringing wares into the town, and none heeded them much, till they came to the very gate, on the further side of a moat that was both deep and clean, but as now the bridge was down and the portcullis up, so that the market people might pass in easily, for it was yet early in the day. But before the door on either side stood men-at-arms well weaponed, and on the right side was their captain, a tall man with bare grizzled head, but otherwise all armed, who stopped every one whom he knew not, and asked their business. As Ralph came riding up with Roger beside him, one of the guard laid his spear across and bade them stand, and the captain spake in a dry cold voice, whence comest thou, man-at-arms?
From the Abbey of St. Mary at Higham, said Ralph.
Yea, said the captain, smiling grimly, even so I might have deemed, thou wilt be one of the Lord Abbot's lily lads.
No I am not, quoth Ralph angrily.
Well, well, said the captain, what is thy name?
Ralph Motherson, quoth Ralph, knitting his brow.
Said the captain, and whither wilt thou?
Said Ralph, on mine own errands.
Thou answerest not over freely, quoth the captain.
Said Ralph, then is it even, for thou askest freely enough.
Well, well, said the captain, grinning in no unfriendly wise, thou seemest a stout lad enough, and as to my asking, it is my craft as captain of the North Gate, but now tell me friendly, goest thou to any kinsman or friend in the burg?
Then Ralph's brow cleared and he said, nay, fair sir.
Well then, said the captain, art thou but riding straight through to another gate, and so away again?
Nay, said Ralph, if I may, I would abide here the night over, or may happen longer.
Therein thou shalt do well, young man, said the captain, then I suppose thou wilt to some hostelry?
Tell me which one.
Said Ralph, nay, I want not to which one, knowing not the town. But Roger close by him spake and said, my lord shall go to the Flower de Luce, which is in the big square.
Truly, said the captain, he goes to a good harbour, and moreover, fair sir, tomorrow thou shalt see a goodly sight from thine inn, thou mayst do no better, lord.
But thou, Carl, who art thou, who knowest the inside of our burg so well, though I know thee not, for as well as I know our craftsmen and vavasors? Then Roger's words hung on his lips a while, and the knight bent his brow on him, till at last he said, "Sir Captain, I was minded to lie, and say that I am this young knight's serving man." The captain broke in on him grimly, "Thou wert best not lie."
"Yea, sir," quoth Roger, "I deemed, as it was on my tongue's end, that thou wouldst find me out, so I have naught to do but tell thee the very sooth. This it is, I am a man made masterless by the thieves of the Dry Tree. From my land at Hampton _ have I been driven, my chattels have been lifted, and my friend slain, and therefore by your leave would I ride in the host of the burg, that I may pay back the harm which I had, according to the saw, better bail by breeding bail. So, Lord, I ask thee, wilt thou lend me the sword and give me the loaf, that I may help both thee, and the burg, and me?" The captain looked at him closely and sharply, while the carle faced him with open simple eyes, and at last he said, "Well, carle, thou wert about to name thyself this young knight's serving man, be thou even so whiles he abideth in the burg, and when he leaveth the burg then come back to me here any day before noon, and maybe I shall then put a sword in thy fist and horse between thy thighs. But," and he wagged his head threateningly at Roger, "see that thou art at the Flower de Luce when thou art called for." Roger held his peace and seemed somewhat abashed at this word, and the captain turned to Ralph and said courteously, "Young knight, if thou art seeking adventures, thou shalt find them in our host, and if thou be but half as wise as thou seemest bold, thou wilt not fail to gain honor and wealth both, in the service of the burg, for we be overmuch beset with feemen that we should not welcome any wide and wary warrior, though he be an alien of blood and land. If thou thinkest well of this, then send me thy man here and give me word of thy mind, and I shall lead thee to the chiefs of the port, and make the way easy for thee." Ralph thanked him and rode through the gate into the street, and Roger still went beside his stirrup. Presently Ralph turned to Roger and spake to him somewhat sourly, and said, "Thou hadst one lie in thy mouth and didst swallow it, but how shall I know that another did not come out thence? Withal thou must needs be my fellow here, will I, nil I, for thou it was that didst put that word into the captain's mouth that thou shouldst serve me while I abide in the burg. So I will say here and now, that my mind misgives me concerning thee, whether thou be not of those very thieves and tyrants whom thou didst me say but a little while ago."
"Yea," said Roger, "thou art wise indeed to set me down as one of the Dry Tree, doubtless that is why I delivered thee from their ambush even now. And as for my service, thou mayst need it, for indeed I deem thee not so safe as thou deemest thyself in this burg."
"What," said Ralph, "dost thou blow hot and cold? Why even now, when we were in the wood, thou wert telling me that I had naught at all to fear in the burg of the Four Friths, and that all was done there by reason and with justice. What is this new thing then which thou hast found out, or what is that I have to fear?"
Roger changed countenance thereat and seemed somewhat confused, as one who has been caught unawares, but he gat his own face presently, and said, "Nay, Sir Knight, I will tell thee the truth right out. In the wood yonder thy danger was great that thou mightest run into the hands of them of the Dry Tree, therefore true it is that I spake somewhat beyond my warrant concerning the life of the folk of the burg, as how could I help it? But surely whatever thy peril may be here, it is naught to that which awaited thee at Hampton."
"Nay, but what is the peril?" said Ralph. Quoth Roger, "If thou wilt become their man and enter into their host, there is none, for they will ask few questions of so good a man at arms, when they know that thou art theirs. But if thou nay that, it may well be that they will be for turning the key on thee till thou tellest them what and whence thou art." Ralph answered not, thinking in his mind that this was like enough, so he rode on soberly, till Roger said, "Anyhow, thou mayst turn the cold shoulder on me if thou wilt. Yet were I thee, I would not, for so it is, both that I can help thee, as I deem, in time to come, and that I have helped thee somewhat in time past." Now Ralph was young and could not abide the blame of thanklessness, so he said, "Nay, nay, fellow, go we on together to the Flower de Luce." Roger nodded his head and grumbled somewhat, and they made no stay except that now and again Ralph drew rein to look at goodly things in the street, for there were many open booths therein, so that the whole street looked like a market. The houses were goodly of building, but not very tall, the ways wide and well paved. Many folk were in the street, going up and down on their errands, and both men and women of them seemed to Ralph stout and strong, but not very fair of favor. With all they seemed intent on their business, and paid little heed to Ralph and his fellow, though he was by his attire plainly a stranger. Now Ralph sees a house more gaily adorned than most, and a sign hung out from it whereon was done an image of Saint Loy, and underneath the same a booth on which was set out weapons and war gear exceeding goodly,
and two knaves of the armorer were standing by to serve folk, and crying their wares with "What do you lack?" from time to time. So he stayed and fell to looking wistfully at the gleam and glitter of those fair things, till one of the aforesaid knaves came to his side and said, "Fair sir, surely thou lackest somewhat. What have we here for thy needs?" So Ralph thought and called to mind that strong little steel axe of the man whom he had slain yesterday, and asked for the sight of such a weapon, if he might perchance cheapen it. And the lad brought a very goodly steel axe, gold inlaid about the shaft, and gave him the price thereof, which Ralph deemed he might compass, so he brought round his scrip to his hand, that he might take out the money. But while his hand was yet in the bag, out comes the master armorer, a tall and very stark carl, and said in courteous wise, "Sir knight, thou art a stranger to me and I know thee not, so I must needs ask for a sight of thy license to buy weapons, under the seal of the burg." "Hear a wonder," said Ralph, "that a free man for his money shall not buy ware set out to be bought, unless he have the burg reeve's hand and seal for it. Nay, take thy florins, master, and give me the axe and let the jest end there." "I jest not, young rider," quoth the armorer. "When we know thee for a liegeman of the burg, thou shalt buy what thou wilt without question, but otherwise I have told thee the law, and how may I, the master of the craft, break the law? Be not wrath, fair sir, I will set aside thine axe for thee, till thou bring me the license, or bid me come see it, and thou shalt get the said license at the town hall straightway, when they may certify thee no foeman of the burg." Ralph saw that it availed nothing to bicker with the smith, and so went his way somewhat crestfallen, and that the more as he saw Roger grinning a little. Now they come into the marketplace, on one side whereof was the master church of the town, which was strongly built and with a tall tower to it, but was not very big, and but little adorned. Over against it they saw the sign of the Flower de Luce, a goodly house and great. Thitherward they turned, but in the face of the hostelry amidmost the place was a thing which Roger pointed at with a grin that spoke as well as words, and this was a high gallows tree furnished with four forks or arms, each carved and wrought in the fashion of the very bough of a tree, from which dangled four nooses, and above them all was a board whereon was written in big letters "The Dry Tree." And at the foot of this gallows were divers folk laughing and talking. So Ralph understood at once that those four men whom he had seen led away bound yesterday should be hanged thereon. So he stayed a franklin who was passing by, and said to him, "Sir, I am a stranger in the town, and I would know if justice shall be done on the four woodmen today." "Nay," said the man, "but tomorrow, they are even now before the judges." Then said Roger in a surly voice, "Why art thou not there to look on?" "Because," quoth the man, "there is little to see there, and not much more to hearken. The thieves shall be speedily judged, and not questioned with torments, so that they may be the lustier to feel what the hangman shall work on them tomorrow, then forsooth the show shall be goodly. But far better had it been if we had had in our hands the great witch of these dastards, as we look to have her, but now folk say that she has not been brought within gates, and it is to be feared that she hath slipped through our fingers once more." Roger laughed, and said, "Simple are ye folk of the burg and know not of her shifts. I tell thee it is not unlike that she is in the burg even now, and hath in hand to take out of your prison the four whom ye have caught." The franklin laughed scornfully in his turn and said, "If we be simple, thou art a fool merely. Are we not stronger and more than the dry tree? How should she not be taken? How should she not be known if she were walking about these streets? Have we no eyes, fool Carl?" And he laughed again, for he was wroth. Ralph hearkened, and a kind of fear seemed griping his heart, so he asked the franklin, "Tell me, sir, are ye two speaking of a woman who is queen of these strong thieves?" "Yea," said he, "or it might better be said that she is their goddess, their Mahomet, their devil, the very heart and soul of their wickedness. But one day shall we have her body and soul, and then shall her body have but an evil day of it till she dieth in this world." "Yea, forsooth, if she can die at all," quoth Roger. The franklin looked sourly on him and said, "Good man, thou knowest much of her, meseemeth whence art thou?" Said Roger speedily, "From Hampton _, and her rebel I am, and her dastard, and her runaway. Therefore I know her forsooth." "Well," the franklin said, "thou seemest a true man, and yet I would counsel thee to put a rein on thy tongue when thou art minded to talk of the devil of the dry tree, or thou mayst come to harm in the burg." He walked away towards the gallows therewith, and Roger said, almost as if he were talking to himself, "A heavy-footed fool goeth yonder, but after this talk we were better hidden by the walls of the Flower de Luce." So therewith they went on toward the hostel. But the marketplace was wide, and they were yet some minutes getting to the door, and ere they came there Ralph said, knitting his brows anxiously, "Is this woman fair or foul to look on?" "That is not so easy to tell of," said Roger,
whiles she is foul, whiles very fair, whiles young and whiles old, whiles cruel and whiles kind. But note this, when she is the kindest then are her carles the cruelest, and she is the kinder to them because they are cruel. Ralph pondered what he said, and wondered if this were verily the woman whom he had delivered, or some other. As if answering to his unspoken thought, Roger went on, "They speak but of one woman amongst them of the Dry Tree, but in sooth they have many others who are like unto her in one way or other, and this again is a reason why they may not lay hands on the very queen of them all." Therewithal they came unto the hostel, and found it fair enough within, the hall great and goodly for such a house, and with but three chapmen carles therein. Straightway they called for meat, for it was now past noon, and the folk of the house served them when the grooms had taken charge of Falcon. And Roger served Ralph as if he were verily his man. Then Ralph went to his chamber aloft and rested a while, but came down into the hall a little before noons, and found Roger there walking up and down the hall floor, and no man else, so he said to him, "Though thou art not of the burg, thou knowest it, wilt thou not come abroad then, and show it me? For I have a mind to learn the ways of the folk here." Said Roger, and smiled a little, "If thou commandest me as my lord, I will come, yet I were better pleased to abide behind, for I am weary with night waking and sorrow, and have a burden of thought, one which I must bear to the end of the road, and if I put it down I shall have to go back and take it up again." Ralph thought that he excused himself with more words than were needed, but he took little heed of it, but nodded to him friendly, and went out of the house afoot, but left his weapons and armor behind him by the rede of Roger. 3 Chapter 13 The Streets of the Burg of the Four Friths. He went about the streets and found them all much like to the one which they had entered by the north gate. He saw no poor or wretched houses, and none very big as of great lords. They were well and stoutly builded, but as aforesaid not much adorned either with carven work or painting. There were folk enough in the streets, and now Ralph, as was like to be, looked specially at the women, and thought many of them little better favored than the men, being both dark and low. Neither were they gaily clad, though their raiment, like the houses, was stout and well wrought. But here and there he came on a woman taller and whiter than the others, as though she were of another blood. All such of these as he saw were clad otherwise than the darker women, their heads uncoiffed, uncovered save for some garland or silken band, their gowns yellow like wheat straw, but gaily embroidered, sleeveless withal and short, scarce reaching to the ankles, and while so thin that they were rather clad with the embroidery than the cloth, shoes they had not, but sandals bound on their naked feet with white thongs, and each bore an iron ring about her right arm. The more part of the men wore weapons at their sides and had staves in hand, and were clad in short jerkins brown or blue of color, and looked ready for battle if any moment should call them thereto. But among them were men of different favor and stature from these, taller for the most part, unarmed, and clad in long gowns of fair colors with cloths of thin and gay colored web twisted about their heads. These he took for merchants, as they were oftenest standing in and about the booths and shops, whereof there were some in all the streets, though the market for victuals and such like he found over for that day, and but scantily peopled. Out of one of these markets, which was the fish and fowl market, he came into a long street that led him down to a gate right over against that whereby he had entered the burg, and as he came thereto he saw that there was a wide way clear of all houses inside of the wall, so that men-at-arms might go freely from one part to the other, and he had also noted that a wide way led from each port out of the great place, and each ended not but in a gate. But as to any castle in the town, he saw none, and when he asked a burgher thereof, the carle laughed in his face, and said to him that the whole burg, houses and all, was a castle, and that it would turn out to be none of the easiest to win. And forsooth Ralph himself was much of that mind. Now he was just within the south gate when he held this talk, and there were many folk thereby already, and more flocking thereto, so he stood there to see what should betide, and anon he heard great blowing of horns and trumpets all along the wall, and, as he deemed, other horns answered from without, and so it was, for soon the withoutward horns grew louder, and the folk fell back on either side of the way, and next the gates were thrown wide open, which before had been shut save for a wicket, and thereafter came the first of a company of men-at-arms, footmen, with bills some, and some with bows, and all armed knights and sergeants a horseback. So streamed in these weaponed men till Ralph saw that it was a great host that was entering the burg, and his heart rose within him, so warrior-like they were of men in array, though no big men of their bodies, and many of them bore signs of battle about them, both in the battering of their armor and the rending of their raiment, and the clouts tied about the wounds on their bodies. After a while among the warriors came herds of neat and flocks of sheep and strings of horses, of the spoil which the host had lifted, and then wains felled, some with weapons and war gear, and some with bales of goods and household stuff. Last came captives, some going afoot and some for weariness borne in wains,
For all these war-taken thralls were women and women children, of males there was not so much as a little lad. Of the women many seemed fair to Ralph despite their grief and travel, and as he looked on them he deemed that they must be of the kindred and nation of the fair white women he had seen in the streets, though they were not clad like those, but diversely. So Ralph gazed on this pageant till all had passed, and he was weary with the heat and the dust and the confused clamour of shouting and laughter and talking, and whereas most of the folk followed after the host and their spoil, the streets of the town thereabout were soon left empty and peaceful. So he turned into a street narrower than most, that went east from the south gate and was much shaded from the afternoon sun, and went slowly down it, meaning to come about the inside of the wall till he should hit the east gate, and so into the great place when the folk should have gone their ways home. He saw no folk in the street save here and there an old woman sitting at the door of her house, and maybe a young child with her. As he came to where the street turned somewhat, even such a Carline was sitting on a clean white doorstep on the sunny side, somewhat shaded by a tall rose laurel tree in a great tub, and she sang as she sat spinning, and Ralph stayed to listen in his idle mood, and he heard how she sang in a dry, harsh voice. Clashed sword on shield in the harvest field, and no man blames the red red flames, war's candle wick on roof and rick. Now dead lies the yeoman unwept and unknown on the field he hath furrowed, the ridge he hath sown, and all in the middle of weathers and neat the maidens are driven with blood on their feet, for yet twixt the burg gate and battle half won the dust-driven highway creeps uphill and on, and the smoke of the beacons goes coiling aloft, while the gathering horn bloweth loud, louder and oft. Throw wide the gates for naught night waits, though the chase is dead the moon's o'erhead and we need the clear our spoil to share. Shake the lots and the helm then for brethren are we, and the goods of my missing are gainful to thee. Lo! Thine are the weathers, and his are the kine, and the colts of the marshland unbroken are thine, with the dapple grey stallion that trampled his groom, and Giles hath the gold-blossomed rose of the loom. Lo! Leaps out the last lot and naught have I won, but the maiden unmerry, by battle undone. Even as her song ended came one of those fair yellow-gowned damsels round the corner of the street, bearing in her hand a light basket full of flowers, and she lifted up her head and beheld Ralph there. Then she went slowly and dropped her eyelids, and it was pleasant to Ralph to behold her, for she was as fair as need be. Her corn-colored gown was dainty and thin, and but for its silver embroidery had hidden her limbs but little, the rosiness of her ankles showed amidst her white sandal thongs, and there were silver rings and gold on her arms along with the iron ring. Now she lifted up her eyes and looked shyly at Ralph, and he smiled at her well pleased, and deemed it would be good to hear her voice, so he went up to her and greeted her, and she seemed to take his greeting well, though she glanced swiftly at the carline in the doorway. Said Ralph, "Fair maiden, I am a stranger in this town, and have seen things I do not wholly understand. Now wilt thou tell me before I ask the next question, who will be those war-taken thralls whom even now I saw brought into the burg by the host? Of what nation be they, and of what kindred?" Straightway was the damsel all changed, she left her dainty tricks, and drew herself up straight and stiff. She looked at him in the eyes, flushing red, and with knit brows, a moment, and then passed by him with swift and firm feet as one both angry and ashamed. But the carline who had beheld the two with a grin on her wrinkled face changed aspect also, and cried out fiercely after the damsel, and said, "What? Dost thou flee from the fair young man, and he so kind and soft with thee, thou jade? Yea, I suppose thou dost fetch and carry for some mistress who is young and a fool, and who has not yet learned how to deal with the daughters of thine accursed folk. Ah! If I had but money to buy some one of you, and a good one, she should do something else for me than showing her fairness to young men, and I would pay her for her long legs and her white skin, till she should curse her fate that she had not been born little and dark-skinned and free, and with heels unbloodied with the blood of her back." Thus she went on, though the damsel was long out of earshot of her curses, and Ralph tarried not to get away from her spiteful babble, which he now partly understood, and that all those yellow-clad damsels were thralls to the folk of the burg, and belike were of the kindred of those captives late taken whom he had seen amidst the host at its entering into the burg. So he wandered away thence thinking on what he should do till the sun was set, and he had come into the open space underneath the walls, and had gone along it till he came to the east gate. There he looked around him a little and found people flowing back from the great place, whereto they had gathered to see the host mustered and the spoil blessed. Then he went on still under the wall, and noted not that here and there a man turned about to look upon him curiously, for he was deep in thought concerning the things which he had seen and heard of, and pondered much what might have befallen his brethren since they sundered at the Wantway nigh to the high house of Upmeads. Withal the chief thing that he desired was to get him away from the burg, for he felt himself unfree therein, and he said to himself that if he were forced to dwell among this folk, that he had better never have stolen himself away from his father and mother,
and whiles even he thought that he would do his best on the morrow to get him back home to Upmeads again. But then when he thought of how his life would go in his old home, there seemed to him a lack, and when he questioned himself as to what that lack was, straightway he seemed to see that Lady of the Wildwood standing before the men-at-arms in her scanty raiment the minute before his life was at adventure because of them. And in sooth he smiled to himself then with a beating heart, as he told himself that above all things he desired to see that lady, whatever she might be, and that he would follow his adventure to the end until he met her. Amidst these thoughts he came unto the north gate, whereby he had first entered the burg, and by then it was as dark as the summer night would be, so he woke up from his dream, as it were, and took his way briskly back to the Flower de Luce. Chapter 14. What Ralph heard of the matters of the Burg of the Four Friths. There was no candle in the hall when he entered, but it was not so dark therein but he might see Roger sitting on a stool near the chimney, and opposite to him on the settle sat two men, one very tall and big, the other small. Roger was looking away from these, and whistling, and it came into Ralph's mind that he would have him think that he had naught to do with them, whether that were so or not. But he turned round as Ralph came up the hall and rose and came up to him, and fell to talking with him and asking him how he liked the burg, and ever he spake fast and loud, so that again it came on Ralph that he was playing a part. Ralph heeded him little, but ever looked through the hall dusk on those twain, who presently arose and went toward the hall door, but when they were but halfway across the floor a chamberlain came in suddenly, bearing candles in his hands, and the light fell on those guests and flashed back from a salot on the head of the big man, and Ralph saw that he was clad in a long white gabardine, and he deemed that he was the very man whom he had seen last in the great place at Higham, nigh the church, and before that upon the road. As for the smaller man, Ralph had no knowledge of him, for he could see but little of his face, whereas he was wrapped up in a cloak, for as warm as the evening was, and wore a slouch hat withal, but his eyes seemed great and wondrous bright. But when they were gone Ralph asked Roger if he knew aught of them, or if they had told him aught. "Nay," said Roger, "they came in here as I sat alone, and had their meat, and spake naught to me, and little to each other. I deem them not to be of the burg. Nay, sooth to say, I doubt if they be true men." As he spake came in a sort of the townsmen somewhat merry and noisy, and called for meat and drink and more lights, so that the board was brought and the hall was speedily astir. These men, while supper was being dight, fell to talking to Ralph and Roger, and asking them questions of whence and whither, but no wise uncourteously, to whom Roger answered with the tale which he had told Ralph, and Ralph told what he would, and that was but little. But when the board was dight they bade them sit down with him and eat. Ralph sat down at once, and Roger would have served him, but Ralph bade him do it not, and constrained him to sit by his side, and they two sat a little apart from the townsmen. So when they had eaten their fill, and wine was brought, and men were drinking kindly, Ralph began to ask Roger concerning those women whom he had seen in the street, and the captives whom he had seen brought in by the host, and if they were of one kindred, and generally how it was with them, and he spake somewhat softly as if he would not break into the talk of the townsmen, but Roger answered him in a loud voice so that all could hear. "Yea, Lord, I will tell thee the tale of them, which setteth forth well both the wise policy and the great mercy of the folk of the burg and their rulers." Said Ralph, "Are these women also of the Dry Tree? For I perceive them to be born of the foes of the burg." Now the townsmen had let their talk drop a while to listen to the talk of the aliens, and Roger answered still in a loud voice, "Nay, nay, it is not so. These queens are indeed war-taken thralls, but not from them of the Dry Tree, or they would have been slain at once, like as the carless of those accursed ones. But these are of the folk of the Wheat-wearers, even as those whom thou sawest brought today amidst the other spoil. And to this folk the burg showeth mercy, and whence so the host goeth against them and overcometh, and that is well nigh whenever they meet, these worthy lords slay no woman of them, but the men only, whether they be old or young or youngest. As for their women they are brought hither and sold at the market cross to the highest bidder. And this honour they have, that such of them as be fair, and that is the more part of the younger ones, fetch no ill penny. Yet for my part I were loath to cheapen such wares, for they make but evil servants, being proud, and not abiding straps lightly, or toiling the harder for them, and they be somewhat too handy with the knife if they deem themselves put upon. Speak I sooth, my masters?" quoth he, turning toward them of the town. Said a burgher somewhat stricken in years, "Nought but sooth, peaceable men like to me eschew such servants, all the more because of this, that if one of these queens misbehave with the knife, or strayeth from her master's bed, the laws of the burg meddle not therein. For the wise men say that such folk are no more within the law than kine be, and may not for their deeds be brought before leet or assize any more than kine. So that if the master punish her not for her misdoings, unpunished she needs must go,
yea, even if her deed be mere murder.
That is sooth, said a somewhat younger man, yet whiles it fareth ill with them at the hands of our women. To wit, my father's brother has even now come from the war to find his thrall all spoilt by his wife, and what remedy may he have against his wife? His money is gone, even as if she had huffed his horse or his best cow.
Yea, said a third, we were better without such cattle. A thrust with a sword and all the tale told, were the better way of dealing with them.
Said another, yet are the queen's good Websters, and, lacking them, figured cloth of silk would be far-fetched and dear-bought here.
A young man gaily clad, who had been eyeing the speakers disdainfully, spake next and said, Fair sirs, ye are speaking like hypocrites, and as if your lawful wives were here to hearken to you, whereas ye know well how goodly these thralls be, and that many of them can be kind enough withal, and ye would think yourselves but ill bested if ye might not cheapen such jewels for your money. Which of you will go to the cross next Saturday and there buy him a fairer wife than he can wed out of our lineages? And a wife withal of whose humors he need take no more account of than the dullness of his hound or the skittish temper of his mare, so long as the thong smarts, and the twigs sting.
One or two grinned as he spake, but some bent their brows at him, yet scarce in earnest, and the talk thereover dropped, nor did Ralph ask any more questions, for he was somewhat downhearted, calling to mind the frank and free maidens of Upmead, and their friendly words and hearty kisses. And him seemed the world was worse than he had looked to find it.
Howsoever, the oldest and soberest of the guests, seeing that he was a stranger and of noble aspect, came unto him and sat by him, and fell to telling him tales of the wars of the men of the Burg with the wheat-wearers, and how in time past, when the town was but little fenced, the wheat-wearers had stormed their gates and taken the city, and had made a great slaughter, but yet had spared many of the fighting men, although they had abided there as the masters of them, and held them enthralled for three generations of men, after which time the sons of the old Burg dwellers having grown very many again, and divers of them being trusted in sundry matters by the conquerors, who oppressed them but little, rose up against them as occasion served, in the winter season and the Yule feast, and slew their masters, save for a few who were hidden away. And thereafter, quoth he, did we make the Burg strong and hard to win, as ye see it today, and we took for our captain the forest lord, who erewhile had dwelt in the clearings of the wildwood, and he wedded the fair lady who was the son's daughter of him who had been our lord ere the wheat-wearers overcame us, and we grew safe and free and mighty again. And the son of the forest lord, he whom we call the war-smith, he it was who beheld the Burg too much given to pleasure, and delighting in the softness of life, and he took order to harden our hearts, and to cause all freemen to learn the craft of war and battle, and let the women and thralls and aliens see to other craftsmanship and to chaffer, and even so is it done as he would, and ye shall find us hardy of heart enough, though belike not so joyous as might be. Yet at least we shall not be easy to overcome.
So indeed it seemeth, said Ralph. Yet will I ask of you first one question, and then another.
Ask on, said the burgher.
Said Ralph, how is it that ye, being so strong, should still suffer them of the Dry Tree, taking a man here and a man there, when ye might destroy them utterly?
The burgher reddened and cleared his throat and said, Sir, it must be made clear to you that these evil beasts are no peril to the Burg of the Four Friths. All the harm they may do us, is as when a cur-dog biteth a man in the calf of the leg, whereby the man shall be grieved indeed, but the dog slain. Such grief is that they have done us at whiles, but the grief is paid for thus, that the hunting and slaying of them keeps our men in good trim, and pleasures them, shortly to say it, they are the chief deer wherewith our wood is stocked.
He stopped a while and then went on again and said, To say sooth they be not very handy for crushing as a man crushes a wasp, because sorcery goes with them, and the wiles of one who is their queen, the evilest woman who ever spat upon the blessed host of the altar, yet is she strong, a devouring sea of souls, God help us. And he blessed himself therewith.
Said Ralph, yet a word on these wheat-wearers, it seemeth that ye never fail to overcome them in battle?
But seldom at least, quoth the burgher.
Said Ralph, then it were no great matter for you to gather a host overwhelming, and to take their towns and castles, and forbid them weapons, and make them your thralls to till the land for you which now they call theirs, so that ye might have of their gettings all save what were needful for them to live as thralls.
I deem it were an easy thing, said the burgher.
Quoth Ralph, then why do ye not so?
It were but a poor game to play, said the burgher. Such of their wealth as we have a mind to, we can have now at the cost of a battle or two, begun one hour and ended the next, were we their masters sitting down amidst of their hatred, and amidst of their plotting, yea, and in the very place where that were the hottest and thickest, the battle would be to begin at every sun's uprising, nor would it be ended at any sunset.
Ha! What sayest thou?
Said Ralph,
This seemeth to me but the bare truth, yet it is little after the manner of such masterful men as ye be. But why then do ye slay all their carles that are taken, whereas ye bear away the women and make thralls of them at home, that is to say, foes in every house? It may be, said the burgher, that this is not amongst the wisest of our dealings. Yet may we do no otherwise, for thus we swore to do by all the greatest oaths that we might swear, in the days when we first cast off their yoke, and yet were not over strong at the first, and now it hath so grown into a part of our manners, yea, and of our very hearts and minds, that the slaying of a wheat wearer is to us a lighter matter than the smiting of a rabbit or a famart. But now, look you, fair sir, my company ariseth from table, so I bid thee a good night. And I give thee a good rede along with a good wish, to wit, that thou ask not too many questions in this city concerning its feemen, for here is the stranger looked upon with doubt, if he neither will take the wages of the burg for battle, nor hath aught to sell. Ralph reddened in his word, and the other looked at him steadily as he spoke, so that Ralph deemed that he mistrusted him. He deemed moreover that three or four of the others looked hard at him as they went towards the door, while Roger stood somewhat smiling, and humming a snatch of an old song. But when the other guests had left the hostelry, Roger left his singing, and turned to Ralph and said, Master, meseems that they mistrust us, and now maybe is that peril that I spake of nigher than I deemed when we came into the burg this morning. And now I would that we were well out of the burg and in the merry greenwood again, and it repents me that I brought thee hither. Nay, good fellow, quoth Ralph, heed it not, besides, it was me, not thee, that they seemed to doubt of. I will depart hence tomorrow morning no worser than I came, and leave thee to seek thy fortune here, and good luck go with thee. Roger looked hard at him and said, Not so, young lord, if thou goest I will go with thee, for thou hast won my heart, I know not how, and I would verily be thy servant, to follow thee whithersoever thou goest, for I think that great deeds will come of thee. This word pleased Ralph, for he was young and lightly put faith in men's words, and loved to be well thought of, and was fain of good fellowship with all. So he said, This is a good word of thine, and I thank thee for it, and look to it that in my adventures, and the reward of them thou shalt have thy due share. Lo here my hand on it. Roger took his hand, yet therewith his face seemed a little troubled, but he said not. Then spoke Ralph, True it is that I am not fain to take the wages of the burg, for it seems to me that they be hard men, and cruel and joyless, and that their service shall be rather churlish than knightly. Howbeit, let night bring counsel, and we will see to this tomorrow, for now I am both sleepy and weary. Therewith he called the chamberlain, who bore a wax light before him to his chamber, and he did off his raiment and cast himself on his bed, and fell asleep straightway, before he knew where Roger was sleeping, whether it were in the hall or some place else. 5 Chapter 15 How Ralph departed from the Burg of the Four Friths. Him seemed he had scarce been asleep a minute ere awoke with a sound of someone saying softly, Master, Master, awake. So he sat up and answered softly in his turn, Who is it? What is amiss, since the night is yet young? I am thy fellow farer, Roger, said the speaker, and this thou hast to do, get on thy raiment speedily, and take thy weapons without noise, if thou wouldst not be in the prison of the burg before sunrise. Ralph did as he was bidden without more words, for already when he lay down his heart misgave him that he was in no safe place. He looked to his weapons and armor that they should not clash, and down they came into the hall and found the door on the latch, so out they went and Ralph saw that it was somewhat cloudy, the moon was set and it was dark, but Ralph knew by the scent that came in on the light wind, and a little stir of blended sounds, that it was hard on dawning, and even therewith he heard the challenge of the warders on the walls and their crying of the hour, and the chimes of the belfry rang clear and loud, and seeming close above him, 2 hours and a half after midnight. Roger spake not, and Ralph was man-at-arms enough to know that he must hold his peace, and though he longed sore to have his horse Falcon with him, yet he wotted that it availed not to ask of his horse, since he durst not ask of his life. So they went on silently till they were out of the great place and came into a narrow street, and so into another which led them straight into the houseless space under the wall. Roger led right on as if he knew the way well, and in a twinkling were they come to a postern in the wall betwixt the east gate and the south. By the said postern Ralph saw certain men standing, and on the earth nearby, whereas he was keen-eyed, he saw more than one man lying moveless. Spake Roger softly to the men who stood on their feet, Is the rope twined? Nay, rope twiner, said one of them. Then Roger turned and whispered to Ralph, Friends, get out thy sword. Wherewithal the gate was opened, and they all passed out through the wall, and stood above the ditch in the angle nook of a square tower. Then Ralph saw some of the men stoop and shoot out a broad plank over the ditch, which was deep but not wide thereabout, and straightway he followed the others over it,
going last save Roger. By then they were on the other side. He saw a glimmer of the dawn in the eastern heaven, but it was still more than dusk, and no man spoke again. They went on softly across the plain fields outside the wall, creeping from bush to bush, and from tree to tree, for here, if nowhere about the circuit of the burg, were a few trees growing. Thus they came into a little wood and passed through it, and then Ralph could see that the men were six besides Roger. By the glimmer of the growing dawn he saw before them a space of meadows with high hedges about them, and a dim line that he took for the roof of a barn or grange, and beyond that a dark mass of trees. Still they pressed on without speaking. A dog barked not far off and the cocks were crowing, and close by them in the meadow a cow lowed and went hustling over the bents and the long, unbidden buttercups. Day grew apace, and by then they were under the barn gable which he had seen aloof. He saw the other roofs of the grange and heard the bleating of sheep. And now he saw those six men clearly, and noted that one of them was very big and tall, and one small and slender, and it came into his mind that these two were none other than the twain whom he had come upon the last night sitting in the hall of the Flower de Luz. Even therewith came a man to the gate of the sheepcote by the grange, and caught sight of them, and had the wits to run back at once shouting out, "Hugh, what, Richard, and all ye, out with you, out of doors. Here be men. Where the dry tree? Bows and bills. Bows and bills." With that those fellows of Ralph made no more ado, but set off running at their best toward the wood aforesaid, which crowned the slope leading up from the grange, and now took no care to go softly, nor heeded the clashing of their armor. Ralph ran with the best and entered the wood alongside the slim youth aforesaid, who stayed not at the wood's edge but went on running still. But Ralph stayed and turned to see what was toward, and beheld how the tall man was the last of their company, and ere he entered the wood turned about with a bent bow in his hand, and even as he knocked the shaft, the men from the grange, who were seven in all, came running out from behind the barn gable, crying out, "Ho thieves! Ho ye of the dry tree, abide till we come! Flee not from handy strokes!" The tall man had the shaft to his ear in a twinkling, and loosed straightway, and knocked and loosed another shaft without staying to note how the first had sped. But Ralph saw that a man was before each of the shafts, and had fallen to earth, though he had no time to see aught else, for even therewith the tall man caught him by the hand, and crying out, the third time, ran on with him after the rest of their company, and whereas he was long-legged and Ralph light-footed, they speedily came up with them, who were running still, but laughing as they ran, and jeering at the men of the burg, and the tall man shouted out to them, "Yea, lads, the counterfeit dry tree that they have raised in the burg shall be dry enough this time." "Truly," said another, "till we come to water it with the blood of these wretches." "Well, well, get on," said a third, "waste not your wind and talk, those carles will make but a short run of it to the wall as long as it was for us, creeping and creeping as we be hoped to." The long man laughed, "Thou sayest sooth," said he, "but thou art the longest winded of all in talking, get on, lads." They laughed again at his word and sped on with less noise, while Ralph thought within himself that he was come into strange company, for now he knew well that the big man was even he whom he had first met at the churchyard gate of the Thorpe under Bear Hill. Yet he deemed that there was naught for it now but to go on. Within a while they all slacked somewhat, and presently did but walk, though swiftly, through the paths of the thicket, which Ralph deemed full surely was part of that side of the wood perilous that lay south of the Burg of the Four Friths. And now Roger joined himself to him, and spake to him aloud and said, "So, fair master, thou art out of the peril of death for this bout. Art thou also sure of that?" Quoth Ralph, "Or who are these that be with us? Meseems they smell of the dry tree." "Yea, or rebels and runaways therefrom," said Roger, with a dry grin. "But whosoever they may be, thou shalt see that they will suffer us to depart whither we will, if we like not their company. I will be thy warrant thereof." "Moreover," said Ralph, "I have lost Falcon my horse, it is a sore miss of him." "Maybe," quoth Roger, "but at least thou hast saved thy skin, and whereas there are many horses on the earth, there is but one skin of thine. Be content, if thou wilt, thou shalt win somewhat in exchange for thine horse." Ralph smiled, but somewhat sourly, and even therewith he heard a shrill whistle a little aloof, and the men stayed and held their peace, for they were talking together freely again now. Then the big man put his fingers to his mouth and whistled again in answer. A third whistle answered him, and lo, presently, as their company hastened on, the voices of men, and anon they came into a little woodlawn wherein standing about or lying on the grass beside their horses were more than a score of men well armed, but without any banner or token, and all in white armor with white gabardines thereover, and they had with them, as Ralph judged, some dozen of horses more than they needed for their own riding. Great was the joy at this meeting, and there was embracing and kissing of friends,
But Ralph noted that no man embraced that slender youth, and that he held him somewhat aloof from the others, and all seemed to do him reverence. Now spake one of the runaways, "Well, lads, here be all we four well met again along with us twain who came to help us at our pinch, as their wont is, and Roger withal, good at need again, and a friend of his, as it seemeth, and whom we know not. See ye to that." Then stood forth the big man and said, "He is a fair young knight, as ye may see, and he rideth seeking adventures, and Roger did us to wit that he was abiding in the burg at his peril, and would have him away, even if it were somewhat against his will, and we were willing that it should be so, all the more as I have a guess concerning what he is, and a foreseeing man might think that luck should go with him." Therewith he turned to Ralph and said, "How say ye, fair sir, will ye take guesting with us a while and learn our ways?" Said Ralph, "Certain I am that whither ye will have me go, thither must I, yet I deem that I have an errand that lies not your way. Therefore if I go with you, ye must so look upon it that I am in your fellowship as one compelled. To be short with you, I crave leave to depart and go mine own road." As he spoke he saw the youth walking up and down in short turns, but his face he could scarce see at all, what for his slouched hat, what for his cloak, and at last he saw him go up to the tall man and speak softly to him a while. The tall man nodded his head, and as the youth drew right back nigh to the thicket, spake to Ralph again. "Fair sir, we grant thine asking, and add this thereto that we give thee the man who has joined himself to thee, Roger of the Ropewalk to wit, to help thee on the road, so that thou mayst not turn thy face back to the Burg of the Four Friths, where thine errand, and thy life withal, were soon sped now, or run into any other trap which the Wood Perilous may have for thee. And yet if thou think better of it, thou mayst come with us straightway, for we have naught to do to tarry here any longer. And in any case, here is a good horse that we will give thee, since thou hast lost thy steed, and Roger who rideth with thee, he also is well horsed." Ralph looked hard at the big man, who now had his salade thrown back from his face, to see if he gave any token of jeering or malice, but could see naught such, nay, his face was grave and serious, not ill-fashioned, though it were both long and broad like his body, his cheekbones somewhat high, his eyes grey and middling great, and looking, as it were, far away. Now deems Ralph that as for a trap of the Wood Perilous, he had already fallen into the trap, for he scarce needed to be told that these were men of the Dry Tree. He knew also that it was Roger who had led him into this trap, although he deemed it done with no malice against him. So he said to himself that if he went with Roger he but went a roundabout road to the Dry Tree, so that he was well